Good afternoon, I'm Tyler Danberg. The Blue Jackets pick 14th in tonight's NHL draft starting at 7. ESPN projects the CBJ to take defenseman Ryan Lynn from the Western Hockey League's Vancouver Giants. In a flurry of moves Thursday, Jackets acquired Avalanche forward Valeri Nichushkin for a 2026 second rounder, 27 third rounder, and 28 fifth rounder, while also acquiring Canadiens forward Luke Tuck for forward Hunter McCown. Today, CBJ re-signed forward Mikhail Putia to a two-year deal. Baseball, after a 34-47 start, the Mets fired manager Carlos Mendoza after three seasons, naming former Padres skipper Andy Green interim manager. Today, Reds visit the Pirates at 6:40. Guardians host the Mariners at 7:10. This update sponsored by Germaine Toyota for unbeatable service and sales. Visit Germaine Toyota on the corner of I-70 and Bryce Road or online at germainetoyota.net. Breaking sports news when it happens on The Fan, Ohio Sports Destination.
It's time to add some spice to your nooner. Nooner. Funny. This is the place where big-time guests, bold opinions, and little cute doggies come together. This is Rothman and Ice.
Sponsored by Pella Columbus, the number one rated windows and doors in Columbus.
So where's the office back at Division?
In the office, baby. Going out.
All righty, here we go. On a Friday, Scotty Vegas in for the Iceman today. Rothman at Ice, TLC at the switches, TD on the update desk. Boys, how we feeling?
I'm excited. You know what, Anthony? You have been building up this opening story. Okay. I come in this morning, and I like to look at your notes and see, okay, what are we talking about right out of the gate?
Sheet off his paper.
And so I'm starting to look at your paper, and you're like, no, hold on. Yeah. And you hide whatever this story that you have planned for me in the opening segment. You're like, you're not even allowed to look at it. So I got to tell you, I'm ready for it, and I'm excited.
All right. Well, that oversold it a lot. So TLC knows this. In my algorithm, I like to watch body cam vid, like of all different things. Just deputies show up to this and they've got a fine that gives a problem at a public pool or there's something going on at a bar. You never know.
Yeah.
And so this morning, I actually woke up earlier than I wanted to. And start doom scrolling, just seeing what's going on in the world. And what popped up in my algorithm was a guy who everybody knows the name. And they go. So I'll set up the story before I tell you the name. And because I think he's probably one of the biggest locks in sports. And so they start interviewing this young kid, 21-year-old kid. And there was a fight at a bar. Something happened at a bar. And the 21-year-old kid says to the cops, I just turned 21 like 2 days ago. My other buddy turned 21 like 2 weeks ago. And we were with another friend who turned 21 about 6 months ago. So we're all going to go out. We're going to go into the neighborhood bar. And we're going to have a couple beers. And we're going to come home. And so we go to the bar, or the place called Joe's Grill. It's in Indiana. And so they go. And it's about, they're asking, okay, when's last call? Last call maybe around 1:30. Like, all right, we can have another beer for the road, and then we'll all go home. And while they're at this bar, they're sitting across, they're at a section, and they're sitting across, and one of the guys recognizes a guy that presumably lives in their neighborhood who's fairly famous. So the 21-year-old, the guy that just turned 21, is telling the cop, listen, I know the guy, I know the name of the guy, but I don't want to tick him off. I don't care about famous people, but I respect the fact that he is famous, and I'm not going to bother him.
Okay.
But one of his friends does go over and starts talking to this guy, and they have a conversation, and the fresh 21-year-old is just still sitting over by himself. And so it'd be like if you and I went out, and Cole, the three of us went out, and we saw somebody famous at the bar, and Cole wanders over and starts talking to him. And you and I are like, nah, I'm not going to bother him, right? And so Cole has a good conversation with the guy, and he comes back, and then it's time to leave. And as the story goes, as this 21-year-old is telling it, that the famous person then came over to he shook hands with his friend, and then he came over to me. And the guy thinks, well, maybe he was a little upset that I didn't acknowledge him. And I was actually being respectful.
Right.
So then he thought it was weird that the guy was reaching out to shake his hand, and he reached out with his left hand. So that was a little odd.
Yeah.
And then with his right hand, he slaps the guy in the face. The kid that wasn't doing anything. The kid that just turned 21, like 2 days ago. This is all alleged. And I'm watching this body cam this morning, like 6:10 in the morning. It pops up on my feed. This is how I wake up. And it turns out that it's Joey Chestnut. So the 5, I don't know what, how many times he's won. He's won a million times. He's the eating champ. And the first thing that goes through my mind is, okay, how drunk was he? And so then the cops go to Joey Chestnut's house. And he comes out. It's a Sunday night. It's just happened a couple days ago, I guess, or earlier this last week, whatever. And Joey comes out onto the front of the sidewalk, and he starts saying to the cop, I was there. I walked home. It's close enough for me to walk. And they're like, no, this isn't a DUI investigation. We're just trying to find out what happened. Get your side of the story. This kid said that you slapped him out of nowhere. And he says, I don't recall that. I don't recall much. Well, that's somewhat of an admission. And so he's being accused of slapping this dude. And the body cam footage is what I watched today. And he's like, the cop's like, do you have any idea what I'm talking about? And he's like, no, I don't. And presumably his wife is there too. She stepped out onto the porch as well. And then the second thing that went through my mind was, is he now ineligible to like defend a title at the Nathan's deal, which is coming up next week?
So this story comes out and you're immediately going to find odds on the hot dog eating contest. Is that where we're headed with this?
The next guy.
Right.
Like, can you bet on it now?
Like, have the betting sites gotten the news
that's right.
of the arrest?
They
or can
have.
I get a bet in right now on the second, whoever the second favorite
so
is?
So I start scouring the internet for that. And then it says, despite the legal situation, Chestnut is planning to defend his championship at the famed Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest next month, early July. And his lawyer says that my client took full responsibility. And by the way, when I'm watching the body cam, Joey is saying to the cop, hey, please tell him I'm sorry. I really don't know what happened, and I don't know why I would do that. And they said to him, well, we're not going to take you to jail tonight, but it's a Class B misdemeanor battery on this kid, this 21-year-old kid that knew who he was, know he's famous. I left him alone, and out of nowhere, when we're leaving, he comes over and shakes my hand with the wrong hand and uses his right to slap me in the face.
So I have two questions. One is, will Chestnut be in the mental right frame of mind to participate?
Mm-hmm. These are all good questions at the presser.
Yeah, maybe there is good value on whoever is number two on the betting list. And then number two, my question for you is, on your little notepad of notes, because this was a very long, detailed story, what did you have written down that you didn't want me to see?
His name.
Oh, okay.
I recall this from, I watched it this morning, 6 hours ago. I didn't need to write it down.
Okay.
I don't have to need it read back to me. I just wrote down Joey Chestnut Lock. That's all I wrote on the top of my legal
pad. And you thought that would give everything away with your story.
Is he the biggest lock in sports?
Gotta be pretty close, right?
I mean, I don't know who else is in there. They always keep, ever since Kobayashi went away, Mr. Chestnut and the Mustard Belt is the lock of sports.
So we thought that Alcaraz and Sinner winning tennis majors was kind of the lock of in sports, right? That one or the other is going to win the major, but that actually just didn't happen with the French Open. So yeah, you might be right. He might be the lock in all of sports.
I mean, the cool part is he'll be at the thing and he'll be probably, quote, on probation as he's trying to defend his title.
But are we calling this sports? Like, we say the lock in sports. Are we calling hot dog eating?
I thought you said anything you can bet on is a sport.
Well, there's a lot that we bet on that is not. But, yeah.
TLC, what do you think about that? Joey Chestnut defending his title. Will he be more motivated to actually down more hot dogs or less because of this? Feeling a little bit of the public persona he's not Captain America anymore, right? He may have gotten drunk, gotten hammered, and slapped a kid at a bar.
Terrible, Joey Chestnut.
Maybe people be rooting for the Cinderella.
You hate
now
to see your heroes fall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nah, he'll go out there, yeah, tear it up, and then I won't watch it because there's no way I'm... that's right, it's 4th of July, so it's coming up. But I do not spend my 4th of Julys watching this disgusting stuff of people almost vomiting on TV.
Well, you know where I stand on the whole hot dog eating contest. I will watch, but I don't understand why buns are involved. I don't get it. And then they have to dunk the buns so they don't need a Heimlich while they're eating because you don't want to choke on the bread. But I don't just... Old school this, tray of hot dogs, yeah, and go.
So Dave Biddle and I did this one on the money, I think maybe a year or two ago, where it was 4th of July, and we're like, all right, we're doing a Sunday show. It's a 4th of July holiday. How many people are listening? Let's do our own little hot dog eating contest. And Anthony, Dave almost choked and died on air doing this hot dog eating contest. So he got two hot dogs in and he had to excuse himself in the middle of the segment and he went out throwing it up into the trash can in the hallway because he couldn't get hot dog number two down. Yes. Yeah, he can.
What, he eat a big breakfast on the way over?
He just says, if I try to eat things fast, it all comes back up. Mm. And so that's
a mind thing.
It is.
Yeah, you got to be in the right mindset.
Yeah. But by the way, I do have odds for you on Joey Chestnut.
All right, tease those odds.
Okay, yeah. We've got the odds on Joey Chestnut to win next week's Nathan's hot dog eating contest, and you won't believe how big of a favorite he is.
Now, what's the name of the show and what's the radio station?
Rothman and Ice, 97.1.
Bo Bishop and Dom Taberry. Dom remembers when Bo was a young whippersnapper, and Bo remembers when Dom wasn't part ape.
And then Yolanda one time wanted to wax my knuckles.
Tuesdays with Taberry.
Sponsored by Green & Sons.
Tuesdays at 10:30 on The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Chances of showers and thunderstorms in the forecast today, otherwise mostly cloudy with temperatures in the upper 70s. That chance of rain continues overnight and into your Saturday morning with a partly sunny day ahead. Chances of showers and storms, especially in the afternoon, and highs in the low 80s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 weather impact forecast.
We are your radio home for the Buckeyes, Browns, and all the NFL games you can handle. We may have a bit of a football problem.
Oh, yeah.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Anthony finally hit a hole in one.
It's in the hole.
So now what? Just bask in the glory?
And that's how she wrote.
You're listening to Rothman and Ice.
All right, so I assume that the Nathan's hot dog eating contest is on the holiday next week. A week from Saturday, a week from tomorrow, I'm going to guess.
Yep, it is all on the 4th, and we have the over-under on how many hot dogs Joey Chestnut will eat. And maybe your story from last segment kind of relates to this. Maybe this will affect his over-under total more than whether he wins or loses the contest.
So he has the world record.
He does.
Yeah.
And the over-under number, I want you guys, you and Cole, to guess at what you think this number is. You get 10 minutes.
I'm wondering... 10 minutes to guess or 10 minutes
to eat? No. Right. You get 10 minutes to eat as many hot dogs as you can. He does have the world record.
I would say that his over-under is probably 70. He's getting a little... I don't know how old he is now.
He's 42.
42.
So it's fair to wonder.
I'm going to say 75 and a half.
The number that I've... just was going to say with zero information or research was just going to be 78 and a half.
Oh my gosh. You guys are absolutely ridiculous because it's actually 76 and a half. Right in between your two guesses.
Yep.
Wow.
Well, he's the man still. So I looked it up 17 times.
Wait,
he's
looked it up.
No, mustard belt. How many times he's won the mustard belt? I'm a little worried about Dave with his over-under being at 1.5.
Right.
Like that's...
Guys, honestly, we went to break early because Dave had left the studio and he was over there puking. And I, honest to God, had my phone out ready to call 911 because his face was as red as a tomato can. Like, I mean, it was like scary red and he's in the hallway and I'm just sitting here and I'm still on air. And I'm like, I think Baker was producing at the time. And I'm like, we got to take a break because I got to make sure Dave's okay.
And but he was doing a hot dog eating contest live on the air.
Yes, it was him versus me, and Ryan was kind of announcing the whole thing. It was really a terrible bit to begin with, but
it sounds like it. Somebody almost died,
right? Yeah. And I won with two hot dogs eaten.
Let me ask you the question. If you won and somebody died, would you consider it a good bit? Because you
would have gotten a lot of attention, that's yeah. for sure.
So I just got to, by the way, the whole hot dogs, the buns dipping in the water, like obviously to make it go down easier. The water soaks into the dry bread, making it easier to shove down your throat in chunks. It's like the 2010s when the salting cracker challenge was the viral thing on social media.
I must have missed that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
You'd have to eat 6 saltine crackers in a minute, and then your mouth feels like a desert. Like it's, I mean, imagine how worse it feels trying to eat 60 or 70 hot dogs and buns in 10 minutes.
Okay, so body cam footage and saltine cracker challenges. That's Rothman's algorithm.
Well, that was back right. in the day. That was 15 years
Did
ago.
Did you try it?
No, no, I've won a hot dog eating contest when I was a kid.
Well, but that's a drop.
There, you already knew that.
I know, but you didn't say it as clearly as you just did.
How many hot dogs did you eat?
I don't remember.
How long did you have to eat them? I'm going to guess
I probably ate somewhere in the high 20s.
Oh.
As a paramedic.
So 10 times Dave Biddle.
CJ tweeted, as a paramedic, bread is one of the only things you can't choke on. Due to the reality that it basically dissolves when you apply water. Well, that's why they do that. So I believe the water, yes, the water is there to help. That's the lubricant. But I don't endorse that part of it.
No.
Just get rid of the buns. Watching them choke down the whole deal is the disgusting part.
Does it feel like to you that's kind of like corking the bat in baseball? Like that's a...
No, because everybody's doing it. It's a part of the rule. It's not like some person is circumventing the bun somehow or like they're not cheating.
They all have the opportunity.
Yeah, they're not cheating. I don't think it's necessary. All right. Well, we'll table that. I think he's a lock. I mean, I don't think he's...
Well, he's minus 2,500, so the odds would say he's a lock.
That implies... I mean, he is human, but that implies that, lock of all locks.
That off-the-court trouble... Is it court? Is off-the-table trouble may come into play in this whole thing, though.
Yeah. Is outside the bun trouble here.
Think outside the bun.
You guys may have heard this yesterday. If you didn't, I've consolidated this because the big story around here is, and we didn't think it was going to be a big story, is whether or not Zach Werenski is thinking that he's in the mindset of being able to tell the Jackets whether he would sign an extension next summer and how he feels about the team and the organization, where it's headed. He's had a summer of dreams. Wins the gold, becomes a father, wins the Norris Trophy. Like, it's been awesome. And he's a great dude. And you guys hear him on Hockey and Hounds. And he's just a wonderful ambassador for the city and the sport and the team. But you can't blame a guy if he's at the back end of his prime and those windows close fast on whether there's going to be enough promise here and enough winning that will entice him to want to check all the boxes. Because the one thing he didn't get this year was playing in the playoffs again, and he was watching at home with all of us. And so we'll play a little clip of this. This is Don Waddell, the GM of the Jackets, on whether or not he was able to quiet some of the noise yesterday. You did meet with him not long ago. Why would this come up again so soon?
Yeah, I met with him actually the day before the Norris was at breakfast with him, the day before the Norris was announced. And we did. We had a very good conversation. You know, and since then, you know, there's been a lot of noise around the league, of course. And, you know, the question that, you know, that I'm trying to get the answer to is, you know, long-term. We got 2 years left on the contract. If the mind's made up that it's time to move on, you know, then we have to think about it from a hockey club standpoint. But, you know, we're not at that point yet, and we'll continue to talk to them and just... I think it's important to stay in connection not only with your players, but particularly your top player, and just make sure that the way the league is going right now, and seeing some of the players that have moved around, that we feel like we have a fair chance moving forward with Zach.
Did you call the second meeting post draft? Did you reach out to him and say, "Okay, now let's discuss this part of it"?
Yeah, well, that got a little bit probably blown out because I have not scheduled anything yet. I said my plan was to meet with him as a representation after the draft, so we don't have anything scheduled yet, and we'll figure that out here. You know, the focus right now in the next few days, the calls I'm taking on other deals that we've been working on, and, of course, the draft. So we'll get to it, you know, and see where everybody is. And, you know, again, it's not a decision that comes lightly from, I'm sure, from either side. And, you know, we got an obligation here to try to keep moving forward, and we'd like to move forward with Zach. And we try to make sure we're all on the same page as we try to do that.
Is there something about what's happening in the NHL now that you feel is more than a coincidence with guys that are requesting? He hasn't requested anything, correct?
Correct, yeah. Yes, we discussion with his representation, but nothing too definitive yet.
But you would need to have time because of a player of this caliber. You could get a relative haul for him. His value is incredible at this point.
Yeah, correct. And just coming off the Norris Trophy, which is the best defenseman in the league. And, you know, I'm sure that teams will be lining up if we get to that point. And, you know, we just have to see where it goes because nothing says we have to do anything. We have 2 years left, but we also know that if we're not going to get him signed in 2 years, that's a huge asset that we can't just walk out the door and start over with that. So it's something that we have to discuss. And, I think the agent I know well, and he's pretty open about things. So we'll get to where we need to get to here in a very short period.
Would you think it's good news to Jacket fans that you didn't have to have this supposed second meeting before the draft?
To me, first of all, with any of our players right now that we're talking about trades, we're not looking for draft picks and prospects. We want to make our team better. If I was to trade anybody off our team, if they get calls on lots of guys, you know, I tell everybody we need players. We're not looking to add more draft picks to this year's draft or future picks or prospects. We need players for our team. So nothing would change in that case. So the draft really doesn't have effect on any of our players getting traded at this point if we make any decisions to trade any.
Do you feel like that this year, you got Rick back for a year, and it feels like a little bit of a show-me year to Zach, like almost like he's willing to, you know, continue his contract and play, yet the improvements that you make might be a way to sell him on the long term?
Well, winning always helps everything, right? Let's face it. We've made big strides the last 2 years, but we still haven't got the ultimate goal of getting in the playoffs. So, you know, that's our goal when we start the season, obviously, is put ourselves in a position to compete for the Stanley Cup. And, you know, you can talk to players forever, and players want to be parts of successful organizations. So certainly that would be a big step in our favor if we can make the right moves to put us in that position to take that step.
And you feel he's entitled to have knowledge of that, meaning that as your best players, you say, or one of your best players, that he would be involved in knowing your vision and how you intend to improve the team?
Well, I think, yes, I think that's smart. Now, I'm very careful about calling players about players we're training for because everybody's got different feelings. You know, I got a great support staff around me and a scouting staff for a reason. So we make those decisions, but we all know that, you know, if we could add some scoring and add some upfront help, that would be important to all of us. So I kind of know, I know where our holes are, and I know where everybody felt that we need to get stronger and better, and we're going to try to fulfill as much as we can.
There you go. GM Don Waddell of the Jackets, with as candid as he probably could be. I'll tell you what the mystery that still lingers for me, and I didn't ask him this directly, is that if there's no supposed second meeting actually hard and fast on his docket, no date, no time, they're just going to get together after the draft, then why does that information get leaked to the NHL insider, Elliot Friedman? Like, if there was nothing hard and fast, and did that bother him that it did? Or did he just kind of tamp it down a little bit once it did become public? So that mystery still continues. We'll come back in 2 minutes. We'll switch gears to Ohio State and Ross Bjork with his state of the state. His commitment to hoops, where is it? You'll hear it next. Rothman and Ice.
So.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door Showroom on Gemini Parkway. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
The most wonderful people in the history of Western civilization. Rothman and Ice, 97.1 The Fan. It doesn't get any better than this.
Bill sends his best.
Sends his best.
Rothman and Ice, Anthony Rothman, Scotty Vegas in TLC at the switches. So Ohio State basketball, it's weird because I think momentum is year to year now. I don't think it's like you got it and you can't lose it. Especially in this era of college athletics, because there's so much movement, and you never know who you're going to get, who you're going to lose. And so momentum is fleeting, even though you might have it. And years ago, it was like, okay, you know, he's not leaving, or you have a frat, like, you just kind of knew your core was going to be there. And so Ohio State basketball was able to, retain some of its top guys, but also, basically decided one wasn't necessary. And all of a sudden now he's going into the portal and he's done a pretty good job. And so, but we don't know. It's all on paper, right? He's got to stir the drink with all these new faces and everything. But they did get bigger and they've got some skill on the perimeter. And certainly they've got Justin Pippen, maybe somebody that can help Mobley move off the ball a little bit and be the playmaker he can be and the sniper he can be. But it's all up in the air still with NIL and the commitment, Scotty. And my feeling on it is a little, I think Jake sometimes is a little bit in between a rock and a hard place. I think he's overachieved to some degree. But the other part of it is, how much are they going to invest in the program, or do they need him to show them first that they have to invest in the program? Now, from a PR standpoint, you don't want you're selling tickets. You want your fans to be excited about the program. So you want there to be some investment. And my guess is they've probably gotten him up to maybe what they deem is more middle of the pack of the Big Ten, which is acceptable now. And then he's got to take it over the line a little bit and show some growth, get in the tournament again, win a game or two, and see if they can get this thing going. But I think the rock in the hard place for me is, what if he does continue to achieve, like getting in the tournament, maybe winning a game? Then they might say, well, he's doing it without a lot of massive investment. Maybe they just leave it alone. Or is it, if they see him do it, then he will demand and probably be entitled to a lot more of an investment.
So Ross yesterday talked a little bit about how this roster, they feel like they've spent more money this year than they have in the past. And if you look at it, as far as talent goes, Anthony, like, this is by far, probably the last decade, the most talented team on paper. When you take a look that you have a five-star Thompson coming in, and you've got Mobley, and you've got Bynum, and now you've got a 4/5-star guy in LJ Smith coming in, and then you got Pippen transferring in. So talent-wise, it does feel like this is as good of a roster as Ohio State has had in the last 10 years. Now, one of the things that you talked about, the state of the state that Ross Bjork was talking about yesterday, and one of the issues that I have for Ohio State is, if you're trying to create a buzz for In the Shot, you look at the non-conference schedule, and I know that there's a lot of teams moving towards playing a lot of neutral site games, but if you look at the schedule for Ohio State hoops next year, non-conference wise, they're going to play BYU in Salt Lake City, so that's away from Columbus. They're going to play Kansas in Madison Square Garden, obviously away from Columbus. They're going to play at Notre Dame. They're going to play at UConn. So that's...
Well, that's a home and home with UConn, right? It starts on the road, and then they'll be here, right?
And Notre Dame was a home and home, where Ohio State got to play Notre Dame at home this last year. But so the only good non-conference home game that Ohio State has on their schedule planned is Vanderbilt. And I got to tell you, and Vanderbilt's fine. They're a good basketball program. They had a good year last year. But the buzz for the casual Ohio State basketball fan isn't going to be there for Ohio State hosting Vanderbilt. So that's one issue that I see is, gosh, you want to get excited, you want to get pumped up, and you see seven games in the non-conference schedule at home are against little small schools that don't get you excited at all, which will result in the Shot having 10,000-11,000 fans in it total. So you'll have a dead arena for the most part in November and December. And then Anthony, the
other
thing,
that is football season.
Yeah. But
I mean,
still.
Honest, let's be honest about where people have their interest. I understand where you're going with it.
Yeah.
I just want to point out, like, I don't know if that's that important to them that during the height of football, they need to pack the basketball arena. And then when the Big Ten season rolls along, then people start to move in.
But if you had one, if you had UConn or you had a Duke or a big time team coming in November to start the year, I do think there would be some juice, and maybe you even play it around the Michigan game. The other thing, Anthony, I pulled up this morning. I was like, all right, I want to check out how much Ohio State season tickets is costing right now. So I go on and I'm trying to figure out exactly how it is. And I pull up four seats, just thinking of a family of four, and the seats aren't the best options, but they are in the lower bowl. They're in this 200 level, kind of along the around the hoop. So last row, 200 level along the hoop for season tickets. It surprised me.
You're talking about behind the hoop?
Kind of like along the hoop, right? So not behind the hoop, but like kind of the baseline, I guess, okay. is what All you right. would say. So $4,200 for four season tickets, which to me is outrageous. Like, you've got a program that's still trying to build, trying to get some excitement in the shot. You're talking over $1,000, and the only key non-conference home game is Vanderbilt. So you want to get that shot rocking. I think those prices are too high.
How many games?
Well, I mean, you're going to have probably seven bye games, plus you're going to have Vanderbilt, plus you'll have, 10 Big Ten games? So probably about 18 games.
And so you're looking at four tickets. That's what?
4,000.
Under 60 bucks a ticket, though.
$4,200. But Anthony,
I mean, that's like 60 bucks a ticket.
You're talking about seven of those games are going to be against like really, really small schools that people aren't excited about. And I'm sorry, 60 bucks a ticket times a family of four plus add in concessions and parking and stuff. Like, you want to get the shot rocking. I don't think $60 a ticket for season tickets for the last row of the 200 section is the way to go.
Well, it's why some people are going with like a flex plan or something, something different than they're trying to find a little bit of give and take on that. I'm with you on it's a tough sell. It's a tough sell when you don't have non-conference.
Yeah,
that's really good. At least you're going to get, like you said perfectly, you're going to get one game or one big game that I know I'm going to have.
And it's Vanderbilt. Yeah. Like, it's still not a sexy opponent. Like, it's a team that probably will make the tournament, but it's not like, oh, yeah, let's get out to that Vanderbilt game, you know? Yeah. Like, like in the past when Ohio State's played Duke or North Carolina and there's a crazy buzz, or they played Villanova at one point, then there's a buzz for it. There's not going to be a buzz for Vanderbilt.
How long is this bite with Ross Bjork, TLC? Can you spin it now?
123.
Yeah, hit it.
Okay.
Where does your men's basketball program stand when compared to other Big Ten schools? And what more support do you think they need to make sure that they're on an even standing other team, if you feel they're not right now?
Yeah. No, I think Coach Diebler's done a great job of putting together the right coaching staff, which then leads to the right roster, you know, building and development. You know, look, by all accounts, I mean, we're sitting here on June 25th. We should be a lot better next year. I think the pieces that were added, the pieces that were retained with our players, that was a big part of it, is retain the right guys. Obviously, signing somebody like Anthony Thompson was a big deal. That hasn't happened around here in a while. So I think Jake's done a great job. And so if we've done a great job there, that means the resources are there to compete, you know, at a high level. And so we believe in that. You know, Jake has done a good job of cultivating that as well. We put more resources from the department perspective because the formula sort of changed around the rev share. There's more cash from the institution side in the rev share bucket for basketball. So nobody really knows what the numbers are. They're reported out there, and we can read social media just like all of you to say, well, this is their, you don't really know. But I do believe that we are in a competitive spot based on this, you know, this past offseason.
Yeah, that's kind of my read on it. He feels good enough about it because he's not going to go all in. He's got to wait and see. He's got a lot of other bills to pay and a lot of other priorities. But they want it to be good, I do believe. I don't know if it's too much to ask to tell them to say, no, this has to be the priority. Now, they're making improvements to the shot. They're going to do a lot this summer on that, and that's going to be an ongoing thing to kind of keep up with that atmosphere. It's a long season, and it is partially during football season. So it may be a tough ask to get that place packed. Certainly, it's a tough ask to get it packed during non-conference unless you have the one or two big games.
Well, remember, you and I sat down with Michael Redd a couple weeks ago, and we talked about the shot and, you know, his thoughts on it. And he's like, well, guess what? You start winning games, that's actually a great arena to play in because it does get loud. If you sell that thing out and you've got huge games in February and early March, that arena will get really loud. And he's like, when we played there, we were selling that place out because we were really good. So, I mean, for Ohio State, I know atmosphere, people keep talking about the shot atmosphere. Let's be honest. It gets solved by winning games.
It does. But there's to get a big game. I agree with you. To get a big game in there early, and maybe that schedule will get beefed up a little bit, but it's a long deal. You're playing 30 some odd games.
Well, and I will give them credit. So next year you will have UConn coming in. Right. So that's the advantage of the home and home. I just hate how we are going so much to neutral site games. Like the fact that OSU is playing BYU and Kansas, and last year was West Virginia up in Cleveland. So I just wish you could get more campus games than these neutral site games.
All right, we're going to come back. Overs and unders into the weekend. You'll play along. Rothman
and outcome.
Morning Juice is now live on YouTube. Join Bobby Carpenter and Jeff Thedoff weekday mornings from 6 to 8.
Just search 971 The Fan to catch the live experience or watch on demand.
The Fan.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Ohio Heating and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep you and your home comfortable. The Fan.
Rothman and Ice presents Overs and Unders.
Sponsored by the Roofing Guys. For all your roofing, siding, and gutter needs, contact the Roofing Guys at theroofingguys.com.
All right, we've already established the very important one, which is Joey Chestnut's over-under a week from Saturday.
Which was
76.5.
Yep. And you guys were right on it. You said, what, 75.5? Full guess, 78.5. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. You guys were that close.
Well, we know our buns, man.
We know how to throw darts.
Dogs and buns. Joey Chestnut, just a random. Maybe he's just getting fired up for it, and that's why he was all, you know, getting hammered at a local bar and then trying to rile himself up a little bit and all that good stuff. All right, what do you
I'm
have?
Okay for? With the buns. That's fine.
Yeah, I'm okay with the buns. I just don't think you got to dunk them and just get rid of them.
No buns at all?
Bunless.
But that's not a hot dog. Like, you have to have a bun with your hot dog.
Well, then don't dunk it. But then that's probably where the choking comes in.
We have official results from the Deshaun Watson poll from yesterday.
Nice.
We got a lot of participation with this poll, too. So we have
Read the poll.
Here's the poll. Dear Browns fan, can Deshaun Watson win you back enough to want to offer him a new contract? Your options? Yes, if he's good enough. Or no, because fool me once.
Can't get fooled again.
Can we guess at the results?
That's absolutely what we're going
to
do.
The over-under
on yes.
On well, I was going to say no.
Okay, go ahead.
I was going to reverse it.
Okay.
So the over-under.
Reverse it.
Yeah. The over-under on Deshaun Watson not being able to get a new contract no matter what, because fool me once, fool me can't get fooled again, is 90.0%.
So I wrote down 85.
All right, so yesterday when we did the poll, my initial guess was 80-20. And then within 30 seconds, I felt I was low. And what I meant by 80-20 was 80-20, no. 80,
right.
No.
Right. And but I wrote down 85%. I thought 85% would say no.
Again.
I'm going to go. So you're under.
I'm going under.
You're going under. All right, I'm going to go over.
How much over, just out of curiosity?
Oh, you're the one that's right.
I feel like this is, what's the normal temp? 98.6? Like, what is that?
yes.
I feel like this is up there. I would say a 95.5.
Oh. It's not that high, okay. But it is over.
Nice.
Nice. 90.9% say Deshaun Watson is not getting a new contract regardless of his performance because they have so much PTSD from everything that's already taken place that they are not going to be fooled by a strong performance in a contract year. And I 100% agree with that.
It's not, Scotty, it doesn't come down to whether you want to still have him. It's whether you want to pay him a lot. That's, now, fans, it's not their money. Like, if he actually shows up this year and stays healthy and he looks like there's some promise, I feel like this poll today will change. I think if we ran this in November and he's actually looking okay, I think the poll changes slightly.
I mean, every single Browns fan that I ever talk to can't stand it, right?
Can't stand
you.
So
it's like, I don't know what you could do to change people's minds. So I like that 90 actually might even be low.
I mean, he'll be 31 in September. He's coming off an Achilles. And on this team, how good can he really look? That's the other thing he's got going against him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if they win six games, it'd be surprising.
I've said from the very beginning, it may be counterproductive to play him. Because if he plays, he's got a platform for his future team. No, I think they'll both play.
I'm with you.
Yeah. All right. Continue.
All right, we have that, and Serena Williams is playing in Wimbledon. So how many matches, singles matches, is she going to win at Wimbledon, over under a half?
That's so funny, Colt, because...
Because we want to talk about this in the second hour as well.
Oh. Off air, yeah. Anthony and I were saying, will Cole make that an over under? Because we want to get a little deeper dive into that later on. But I'm going to say over, right? Because if like it's the best women's tennis player of all time. You're coming back. I know she's older. But I think she's going to find a way to get one win. It's over for me.
Your over-under is what?
A half a win.
Yeah, so she's 44 playing a 20-year-old. I think she finds a way. I think she finds a way to win that match.
And how nervous is that 20-year-old going to be?
Playing the legend.
Yeah.
But an aging legend. She should want to beat her. This Australian girl that's 20, but... I'm not. Do you have the odds on the match? Not yet.
I don't.
Did we ever get to the bottom of whether or not those weight loss injections she's promoting on commercials count as PEDs?
I don't know. That I don't know.
And if they do, how long does she have to be off of that? So it's like,
she could balloon up during the match, right before the match?
No, the opposite. She could basically deflate herself and then sit out for a few years, which she did. As she's like puncturing her
take her down to the juicing room like Willy Wonka.
Yeah. But so she sits out. So imagine, because I don't even know what the product is, but I see the commercials all the time. And so she's got that. Let's say they do count as PEDs, but like you're not banned forever if you take PEDs. Yannick Sinner's still playing. And so I guess she would just have to sit out. She can just calculate, hey, I'll be out for a few years. Might as well lose some weight in the process. What'd you say, 41 pounds?
I've not been tracking that, but I'm sure she looks
she's
fine.
She's coming back leaner.
I'm going to take the over. On paper, it doesn't feel right. I feel like she's...
Vegas is calculating a parlay as we speak.
I really am. I'm trying to... Well, the problem is she's not... Like, her individual first-round match is not listed. Okay. I will say she's 35-1 to win Wimbledon.
Oh, she's going to run into... who is it? Swiatek
and Sabalenka.
Yeah.
And that's not going to happen. Because every female tennis player is the same last name.
The hardest thing for me to know is whether this Australian girl is good on grass.
Okay, guys, I do have the odds on her. She's playing Maya Joint.
Yeah.
Maya Joint. Minus 145, Maya Joint. Plus 115, Serena Williams.
Well, then you know what that means?
She is a slight dog.
That means this girl is can play on grass. That she must have some history where she's a decent grass court player. But yeah, can you imagine going up against her?
I feel like we got to put some on Serena. Don't you?
At plus money?
Yes, at plus 115.
Back the American?
Yes.
Let's look into this for next hour.
Okay.
I do think there could be some value there. We'll come back top of the hour and we'll talk a little college football. Is this program ready to rewrite their own history? Somebody says yes. Rothman
Council.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good afternoon, I'm Tyler Danberg. After helping the U.S. win Group D at the World Cup, the U.S. Soccer Federation has offered head coach Mauricio Pochettino to lead the USMNT for a second World Cup cycle through 2030, per The Athletic. His current deal is set to expire after this year's World Cup. NHL, Blue Jackets pick 14th in the league's draft tonight, which starts at 7. CBJ remains active this offseason, acquiring Avalanche forward Valeri Nichushkin for 3 picks and Canadiens forward Luke Tuck for forward Luke McCown on Thursday. Today, the team re-signed forward Mikhail Putia to a 2-year deal. Baseball, after a 34-47 start, the Mets fired manager Carlos Mendoza after 3 seasons, Andy Green, interim manager. This update is sponsored by Metal Supermarkets, your convenience store for metal. Visit Columbus at metalsupermarkets.com or 2180 Wilson Road for all your metal needs.
No one funks up the work microwave like these two. Fish again? You're listening to Rothman and Ice.
Second hour of the program, Rothman and Ice, Scotty Vegas in. We'll do pressure cooker this hour. Jean-Luc Grandpierre, CBJ analyst, former Jacket himself, will jump on at 1:30. Give us a little take on the situation with the CBJ and the intrigue and mystery around Zach Werenski and the future of the organization. All right, so there's one school that I used to believe, and I don't think it's necessary anymore, that it's better when they're better. You've heard that in sports. Sports is better when this team is better, when this person is better. We just talked about Serena Williams. Is Wimbledon better with her in it?
Well, it is.
I guess for a moment, but we know her ceiling. She's not winning it.
For two moments.
Yeah,
over,
she's not,
over half a win.
She's right. Not winning it.
Oh, not but the yeah. tournament.
Oh, if we were running the tournament and 44-year-old Serena Williams said, I want a wild card, we'd run to give it to her.
But I will tell you, going down to Cincinnati, you and I do this tennis tournament, right? And do you know, like, once Serena is in the stadium, that stadium fills up, right? Whether she was still good or not good, the last match I remember watching her play, she lost 6-0, 6-1. Yet that stadium was absolutely full and going crazy for Serena. So I do believe in that theory of what you were just saying as far as it's good for the sport when this person is good or when this team is good.
When they're good.
Yeah.
There's certain nostalgic stuff around any aging star that people want to see one last time. It's why people go and pay a lot of money to see old rock bands or old singers, you know, people they liked when they were younger.
Yep.
Even though they don't sound the same, you're buying a piece of your childhood back. And I think that seeing a 44 or 46-year-old Venus Williams or watching them play doubles reminds people of what it used to be, even though they can't be who they are. And I started thinking about this with Notre Dame and whether or not the sport is better when they're better. And I still think it leans yes, because I think when they're better, they have a little villain in them. And why, I don't know. Maybe because they were great for so long, or they had this mystique. I think the arrogance sometimes of the independence gets people feeling they're a villain, that they can be their own program and basically and call their own shots and all that. And then being protected a little bit in the playoff. And this is kind of where we are with Notre Dame. However, I feel like this is tipping, because the more we expand, the more, like, it won't even matter anymore. Like, they should probably be in. They should be good enough. Not necessarily to always make a top 12, but if this thing ever goes to 16 or 24, like, Notre Dame should get the same treatment a lot of the big boys get, which is if you're not a top 24 team, you got major issues. If you're Notre Dame, you can't make a 24 or maybe even a 16. But TLC, before you answer that, Scotty, TLC has a bite here from Greg McElroy, who obviously is a college football analyst, about Notre Dame and whether or not this, you know, this year could validate everything they've always stood for, which is their own independence.
What if Notre Dame wins the whole thing for the program's first national championship since 1988? The first time in the modern era, the Irish are among the preseason national championship favorites. It's not a feel-good story. This is Vegas. So here's what a Notre Dame title would mean. It would not just end a drought, but it would validate the independent model in the playoff era, the idea that you can bypass a conference championship, build a national schedule, and still cut to the front of the line. It would show that when Marcus Freeman told his team to kind of keep the pain and feel the pain and don't waste the failure after getting left out of the field last year, that's the whole 2026 story. But if Carr takes that year two leap and the Irish do go on and win it, well, college football gets its loudest possible ending, that the sleeping giant finally wakes up in the exact era that everyone said the Giants were supposed to be dead. And then one more thing, too. Coaches are so important, but sometimes the place is bigger than the coach. Because when Brian Kelly left, he cited, well, I got a better chance of winning a national championship at LSU than I do at Notre Dame. By the way, modern era would tell you that that's accurate, but sometimes that's exactly what you need to kind of jumpstart the engine of what the Irish have done since. And the response has been phenomenal. And Marcus Freeman was the exact guy to take over, to take Notre Dame to the next level.
You know, they've kind of stiff-armed the old have to join a conference and all that. Like, they've been able to tiptoe around it now. And with the expansion, I think they can continue to be lone wolf. Like, they can be a lone wolf now in college football and be fine. And they weren't last year, though. Like, those, they had to win one of those games. But if this thing goes where people think it's going to go, then they were probably okay to kind of continue to really remain an independent.
It's crazy because we talk about Notre Dame all the time, and they've had shots, right? They were in the championship game 2 years ago, but they haven't won it all, Anthony, since 1988. I was 4 years old. I'm 42 years old now. Like, it's crazy to me. Like, in my lifetime, their one championship was when I was four. It's been so long, yet we talk about them all the time. Now, I will say, when Ohio State beats them, it's extra special. So it means more, right?
Like, because they have history.
If you were to name the top four or five teams that Ohio State fans most want to beat, I think obviously Michigan's one, but I think Notre Dame is probably in that top five because of everyone.
Oh, yeah. Top five of who they want to be.
Yeah.
Right. Michigan.
Alabama is there.
Georgia.
Clemson is probably still, because maybe you take pride in that for Clemson ruining a couple of
years. Like, in my mind, it was a good question.
Penn State. You still absolutely love beating Penn State, but it just, to me, it's extra special when Ohio State beats Notre Dame, and winning that national championship game over Notre Dame was extra cool, right?
Yeah.
Even SEC, though they haven't won it all since 88.
Yeah. They're up there. It's actually a really good question about who they'd rather beat. Part of it goes to whether that program is relevant now. And then the other part is the history you're talking about and what history you have specifically with them. And then the other one to me is just like from just how it would feel. And I think a lot of that is over the SEC. Now, so my mind would go to Michigan. Boy, I really think Georgia for me. Like, I think Georgia would be right there. I think that
it would, because Notre Dame haven't done it in forever either.
Maybe,
right?
Maybe be Michigan for me. Michigan, Georgia. I was going to say Texas, but there's just not.
Penn State wins are always extra special too. Do you guys think
Clemson?
Clemson, well, to me was
you're
top
trying
five.
To write that wrong.
Do you guys think in 10 years Notre Dame is in a conference, or do you think they're still independent?
Ooh, I could see them 10 years from now. See, the thing about it is the fact that the Big Ten already has a clause in their media deal for how the money is going to adjust if Notre Dame joins their conference. Like, the fact that they're that far ahead of it. I hope they're still independent. Although I wouldn't mind them joining the Big Ten now that USC's in there. So the USC, Michigan, Michigan State, there's a lot of rivalries that could be protected and revived. So, well, that's a tough call.
Yeah.
Yes or no. Wow.
So not only that, but you got to think there's a good chance not too far down the line, maybe the Big Ten adds Miami and maybe Florida State. So all of those traditional rivals that Notre Dame has played.
You know what? I would agree with that. If it does become, because we're all calling it the Power Two now or whatever, you know, Big Two, Little Two, whatever. If it does become just like Big Ten and SEC and then everybody else's group of whatever, I do think that would drive Notre Dame towards the Big Ten. So if the Big 12 and the ACC continue to lose teams like every 4 or 5 years, the way that we've kind of had the realignment, if that continues, I think Notre Dame will eventually do it.
Boy, it doesn't. I mean, they've gained such a national rep, and I just don't know if they need to, because it's about need. It's not about want. They don't really want to. Why would they? They got their own deal. They've got it all set up.
Yeah, now Ohio State fans want to be us.
Yeah. Right, because they want to not play noon games all the time and not be beholden to Fox and all of that. But, boy, I think the Big Ten would love nothing more than to bring them in. I think Scotty's right. They offered them in the 90s, but, like, that alumni base and all the donors, they revolted. Like, never. Never in my lifetime. Like, so I don't know where we're going in the sport. Is hard to know, because with it, it's all about expansion now. And if this thing gets to a playoff of 24, then what will really matter?
Well, and if the Big Ten does expand and gets to 24 teams, you got to imagine that they're scheduling that they're going to play 10 or 11 conference games if you do that. And so the opportunities for Notre Dame to play a lot of these Big Ten teams goes away because of the expanded schedule too.
Well, they were hoping that the expansion of the playoff would allow teams to want to schedule more powerhouses, because there won't be the massive penalty to losing the big non-conference game.
Right.
And they thought, but
they thought that with the 12 team also. Mm-hmm. And then we saw Texas play Ohio State, lose that game, and then they complained because, hey, we have three losses, but if we didn't play Texas, we would have gotten in.
Yeah, I do think that if the conferences put out like a mandate to, like, you must boycott Notre Dame, that could force their hand. And I don't know if that's like actual rumors or just like fan speak, but like people have suggested that, like, just come to a conference agreement, don't play Notre Dame, and then they'll have to join someone.
Yeah.
They can't play 12 games of Navy.
Yet I think people do still love to play them. They love what it means. They love the hype of it. All right, we're coming back. Find out who goes in the pressure cooker. Who's feeling it this weekend? Find out next. Rothman
and The Fan has a secret radio station. It's called The Fan 2. You can listen to the Bob and Tom Show, Jim Rome, and Buckeye stuff. Why do they pay me big money to whisper? The Fan 2 is on The Fan's HD2 channel and streaming on The Fan app. You're welcome. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Chances of showers and thunderstorms in the forecast today, otherwise mostly cloudy with temperatures in the upper 70s. That chance of rain continues overnight and into your Saturday morning with a partly sunny day ahead. Chances of showers and storms, especially in the afternoon, and highs in the low 80s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
The Big Nine was a sad, incomplete place. Enter Ohio State. The rest is history. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
The Fan. Rothman and Ice present Under Pressure.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Buy four windows, get four free sale. Visit windownation.com now.
All right, a little pressure cooker. Who's feeling it? So Wimbledon starts Monday. And by the way, I want to praise my producer. It is Wimbledon, not Wimbledon. All right? It's a pet peeve on this show for me. And when someone says it correctly, I like to praise them.
Thank you.
Well done. All right.
Well, Cole's a big tennis guy.
I'll be wearing all white on Monday.
Yeah?
I'll give you a little.
No,
you're welcome.
I wish. Thank you, Peter Griffin.
So it starts Monday. And you know that some quarterbacks can't play in the cold, and dome quarterbacks and warm weather quarterbacks and others. Well, I think Jannik Sinner is facing this weird, can he play in the heat?
Yeah.
Like, I've seen this happen to him a lot. So Alcaraz is missing time with a wrist problem, and Sinner's trying to win his fifth granny and defend his title, and you couldn't ask for a better chance. We thought he had it at the French. So it's kind of a double edge, and I'm going to put it on him more than I'm going to put it on Joker. Joker's going for the magic number of 25, but... And he upset Sinner at the semis at the Aussie. So it's not like he couldn't do it, but I'm going to put it on Sinner. I think there's a lot of pressure. And on the women's side, I'll probably put it on Sabalenka.
Of course.
She's got the one granny title at the Open last year and none so far this year. And she's in the prime of her career. And unfortunately, she's reached the semis of Wimbledon only three times. And adding to the pressure, Rybakina is closing in on her on the rankings. And so now the third prong in this pressure attack of Wimbledon for me is probably on the young girl that's playing Serena. Because you and I talked about this. There's no pressure on Serena. This is a ceremonial match. She's 44. She got in the tournament. If she loses to this up-and-coming 21-year-old Aussie, it's not the worst thing. Now, she doesn't want to get double-bageled and just slither off that way, which I don't think she would. But this is on this young girl. You got thrown into the cooker. You didn't even know it.
No bagel, no bagel, no bagel, no bagel.
You're going to be the most watched match. It really doesn't matter. And now you have to somehow respect a legend and also beat her at the same time.
Well, that's why the three of us are going in on that plus 115 on Serena in the very first match, because you're right. She, whoever she is playing, she is in the pressure cooker. I'm going to go USA men's national team. Obviously, lose last night at the very end. Now we enter the knockout stage.
Did that matter, by the way? It didn't matter. But a lot of people were talking about today, Scotty, real fast, is like, oh, it's a wake-up call, and it was a very dispirited effort. I'm like, if that was a win or be done game, they're playing it a lot differently. They're strategizing differently, aren't they? I mean, it's...
Of course, but now you are under pressure because it's the knockout stage, round of 32, and the U.S. is a huge favorite in this game. So they're playing Bosnia. They're minus 400 to advance. Bosnia is nearly 3-1. So Wednesday night at 8, the fun begins. I can't wait to watch it. U.S. team cannot lose. They are in the pressure cooker.
Man, people were all over that, right? Tactically exposed. And I don't, I'm just saying, I think that's a winner go home game. It's just, it's different. All right, I'm going to go to baseball, and I think the Braves have been the best team in baseball for a lot of the first half, but they've lost four in a row. They lost 7 of 9. They were swept by the Padres, and here come the Phillies now, four back. I know they've had injuries, and they're missing Acuna, and they're missing Strider, and Schwellenbach's been out forever. Who knows when he's coming back, but the Braves have talent. They got to get some of those pieces back. So I'm going to put it on the Atlanta Braves. I think they're feeling something right now. They got to find their way through this little downtime, and they are, and I'm going to check the standings right now to check my work. Obviously still in first place, but like I said, they're going the wrong way. Everybody else in their division, like Phillies, the Marlins, they're 7-3 over their last 10. Atlanta's the exact opposite, 3-7. So I feel like the Braves are feeling a little pressure right now.
I don't know about if this is pressure, but I love that for the college football EA Sports game coming out, Jeremiah Smith gets the highest rating ever, gets a 99, and Ohio State enters as the game's second highest rated team at a 90 overall. That to me, I can't wait. I'm not a huge video game guy, but the one game I do play, Anthony, is college football, and Jeremiah Smith at 99, that's pressure.
So there was a 99 club in the NFL, I remember, in the game, and I think everybody wanted that. And it was Garrett and Jamar Chase and Josh Allen. But you're telling me that no one's ever been a 99 in the college game.
That's what I read. First player in EA Sports college football history to get a 99 rating.
That's only like 3 years, though.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, you think they'd throw it with somebody.
I was listening to the verbiage of that, and I heard EA college football. I'm like, that's not the history. NCAA 06.
Well, did they
it
have the
does
same?
Not include that?
Did they have a similar
that was
rating
EA
system?
Sports.
No. Right, but they rebranded it to get rid of NCAA, and so now they're just doing the generic college football.
But Cole, it's in the game. It's in the game.
EA Sports.
It's in the game.
It's in the game.
Beautiful. Staying on the diamond. Eugenio Suarez. What have you done to my dinger draft team? I don't care that you're hitting 209. That doesn't matter. Just hit some out of the park. Absolutely brutal. This has been one of the most consistent power hitters in the big leagues over the last 10 years. And you drop him into Great American Ballpark, and his slide, this is chutes and ladders, man. I he's just sliding and sliding. And I think prior to last game, he was 1-for-22. I know he missed a lot of May due to the injury with the oblique, but so far in June, he's got like 28 Ks. He's only walked twice. He's in his mid-30s. When is this going to stop? Got 7 home runs. And he had 49 last year. Like, this was supposed to be the pick, TLC. This is supposed to be a guy, middle-late draft for me. Right ballpark, right guy, right time.
This was actually the first injury of the draft.
He's back now, though.
Yep.
So start swinging it. Putting him in the pressure cooker, Scotty.
I'm going to go with a little afternoon pressure cooker.
Afternoon delight.
Yep, because Scotty Scheffler is 6-under through 10.
I might have that.
He's got a short birdie putt, and he is on 59 watch this afternoon. Scotty Scheffler, he is in the lead in the Travelers Championship, but I'm telling you, we could be looking at a 59 here in about an hour, hour and a half. He's already, he's about to be 7-under through 11. So there's your pressure.
Where are they playing this week? TPC River Highlands, Cromwell, Connecticut, which, by the way, I played on EA Sports back in the day.
Really?
On the PGA Tour game back in the day. That was Lance Tenbroke in the whole. That was a great game.
What year are we talking? This is Tiger Woods?
No. This was before. This was probably, you know what? I lied. I'm going to really date myself. This was Sega.
Wow.
This was on Sega. It was a PGA Tour game on Sega, and they used to go to TPC River Highlands was one of the courses.
I think I may have had this game because I remember playing it on Super Nintendo. And I think you're right. I think that's one of the courses. There was like 3 courses in rotation.
Yes.
TPC Sawgrass was on there. And then this. And what was the other?
What would have been the other ones?
Yeah. Gosh, that's so funny that you played that too.
TPC Southwind in Memphis?
Maybe.
I bet that was on there. Sawgrass, Memphis, and I think it was TPC River Highlands.
I would always play Sawgrass.
Yeah. Got to get to that island hole. All right, so you have Scotty Scheffler.
On 59 watch. Pressure cooker.
All right. They're in the cooker this weekend. Couple minutes, we're going to come back and check with our good friend Jean-Luc Grandpierre, CBJ analyst, get his take and also the captaincy on this team and where it's all going. You'll hear it next in 2 minutes. Rothman and Ice.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door showroom on Gemini Parkway.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Hey, this is Michael Behrens, Big Red, otherwise known as the Czar of the Parking Lot, and you're listening to Rothman and Ice on 97.1, The Fan.
All right, he's the man, original jacket, analyst, former player, all-around great dude. He's our friend Jean-Luc Grandpierre. He's on the Bryant Heat and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. My man, thanks for making time for me today. We appreciate it, especially here on NHL Draft Day and all the stuff swirling around the league. How you been?
I've been great. How about you?
Awesome. Awesome. I mean, it has been the summer of Zach. It's been, the winter into the summer. It didn't parlay into a playoff here for the Jackets, but he's had quite a season. And when you get the Norris Trophy, that's big time. With the names on there, and now he's etched into history forever there. But this kind of cropped up just with, Team USA alum and guys moving around and Lark and Tkachuk and, in the past, Quinn Hughes. And do you find it coincidental, or do you feel like that this is kind of a something swirling around where guys are kind of checking their careers and where they are and the windows and how they can close fast? Do you think that he's contemplating this, Zach, I'm talking about?
Hey, I don't think it's a coincidence whatsoever. As you said, we saw it with Matthew Tkachuk. We saw it with now Brady Tkachuk. We saw it in the with youth now Connor Hellebuck, the all-star goaltender from Winnipeg, also in that same situation. And they all happen to be on the American team, right? And, they're seeing the success of other guys, how it's worked so far. And I think more importantly, more than ever now, I think the players feel very empowered about their future. Whether there is a contract in place or not, you look at the Dylan Larkin situation with Detroit, right? It's very, very similar, where they kind of want to, dictate where they're going. And in the case of Zach Werenski, although nothing is official, I'm sure Don Waddell, the minute that we saw that Dylan Larkin situation happen, I'm pretty sure that Don Waddell started having some doubts. And again, Nothing is confirmed. Zach has not spoken about it, but I can definitely, you know, if he wasn't nervous, he shouldn't be the GM of an NHL team, right? You start to see all these guys and you see the trend and you're like, okay, yeah, let me check with my all-star and see where this is going. And again, I don't know what the exact situation is, but you would be a fool to think, hey, I can sleep tonight because, you know, Zachary has another 2 years and we're going to extend it simply because one of his status and the fact that, not by coincidence, he's been on that Team USA where it seems like half the team right mm-hmm. now is dictating their future.
Yeah, it is odd. And I'm trying to find a way through the smoke. And I think there is some. It doesn't mean it's going to lead to a fire. It doesn't have to. And maybe Zach's not going to give him a full commit, or maybe he'll have a little hesitation. And you just can't lose that guy. I mean, we saw the Leafs lose Marner for essentially not much, right? You can't lose a 100-point guy like that, but they did. And I think teams are getting smarter. I think you have to give yourself some time to figure out whether he's all in. And these no-moves clauses are very difficult. And so I think with Don trying to find out his intentions even now. Now, it's tough to find out a guy's intention maybe even a year ahead of time, but I also found it a little odd that if they met, he told me yesterday they met, Don did, that they met the breakfast a couple days before he got the Norris Trophy. And my question to him yesterday was, well, why meet again? Like, the vision didn't change in a few weeks from that, from the CBJ vantage point. And I'm wondering whether they're just, that one was more about just the general, hey, great year and all this, and let's keep in touch. But something drove this potential second meeting that's going to happen after the draft. And I can't figure out exactly why that's necessary unless you're correct and that Don is nervous and he needs to try to get as much body language or real language that he can from him.
Yeah, I think it's more of establishing a timeline. And it could also be, you know, Zach saying, hey, listen, Don, I'm fully committed to this team. Let's see what your plans are for this summer, right? Will you saw the Blue Jackets make some starting to make some moves, you know, from the word around the league, from the so-called insiders. The Blue Jackets have been extremely aggressive in as far as, like, moving for some players. So that could be part of it, too, is like, hey, let's meet post-draft or maybe post-July 1st and see where the team is. And, you know, Zach, what do you think of the direction we're going? Is this something you're willing to commit? Not that they can't even talk about commitment yet, because you still have a full year before he's even eligible for an extension. But at least kind of feel how, you know, your Norris Trophy winner on the back end feels about the direction of the team after a couple more weeks. So that makes complete sense. But again, we're all speculating here because we're not behind the scene and I'm not behind the scene. All we go is off of that, you know, that smoke. And like you said, typically when there's smoke, there's fire.
You know what, Jean-Luc, it's almost like he knows he's got to make moves to improve the team. So even if he got some amazing offer for, let's say, Marchenko even, but it didn't include enough that helps this team, because A, you'd be losing Marchenko. So number one, you don't want to lose him, but he's just not in that mindset. And I think there are teams around the league right now that feel like the Blue Jackets are like open for business, or there's some sort of like liquidation sale based on the fact that there's Zach uncertainty. And I think he's trying to stiff arm that the best he can right now. And I think he's probably doing a pretty decent job at it. It's just, you know, it's a matter of who you want and then who you can get. And those two things aren't the same, especially if you're here in Columbus. But you know what Marchenko can mean to this team. And, you know, there's word that Montreal was going to make a big offer. And he told us yesterday, like, it's nothing's blown him away. He's trying to improve the team. What type of a move do you think the Nichushkin move yesterday gave them?
Well, I think it's a huge move. So Valeri Nichushkin is a, you know, a power forward with silky mitts that plays hard. He's extremely good with possession. So if you look at Mason Marchment and Nichushkin, I think that's probably the biggest difference, is the way that Nichushkin can hold on to pucks and makes plays. And, you know, obviously he scored 20 goals before, so that's something. 31 years old, he's fast, he's big. So that's definitely a big, big upside from that acquisition by the Columbus Blue Jackets. And he's still on the contract for a little while as well. So this contract is going to age well. As far as the other improvement, you know, I don't know exactly what is going to take place, right? But as a general manager, first you hear Zach Werenski's name, and then all of a sudden people are digging, and they're like, oh, how about Marchenko? If you're Don Waddell or any other general manager, Wayne Gretzky got traded, so nobody's untouchable. So you have to listen. It doesn't matter if they're calling about Zach Werenski 2 years ago or this year or next year. As a general manager, you're going to listen to everything coming your way. If somebody were to come in and give you an incredible offer for, I'm just throwing a name, Adam Fantilli tomorrow morning, and you feel like you're improving your club, you have to listen. You can't say, oh, he's untouchable, because nobody's untouchable in this league. We've seen it, whether it's a no trade clause, trade clause. It seems like these guys all get no trade clause, but it really doesn't mean anything at the end of the day, because you'll always find something that would be agreeable to both parties. Both party, unless you're Jason Robertson with Dallas, which seems to be going nowhere right now, but that's a different story.
Rick's, you know, infamous post-presser at the end of the year talking about culture, and certainly he walked that back. It was emotional, but there could be a culture change here. Boone could leave and go try to win here at the end of his career, and I'm curious from your standpoint, is how do you approach the captaincy situation, and how important is it? Does it have to go to a respected leader? Does it have to go to your most skilled guy? Like, how do you view that?
I mean, every coach and organization has a different way about how they hand the captaincy. To me, it doesn't matter if you're a 10-point guy or a 150-point guy, are you captain material, right? And I think a great example was when the Blue Jackets gave the captaincy to Nick Foligno. You know, they waited a little bit because John Tortorella said, I'm not sure if you're captain material, right? So that was a coach's decision. And obviously the organization had a say in it as well. So for your next captain, you know, if Zach Werenski's committed to staying here, is he, you know, the leader that they're looking for? Or are they looking to completely change that? And it's like, hey, you were here before. You were part of the captain group, and we just want to go a different way. I have no idea which way it's going to go. But for me, the amount of points or your status in the league should be irrelevant. And we've seen Rick Bowness, when he was in Winnipeg, you know, going without a captain after the captaincy was stripped. So it's one of these things. I think with Rick Bowness being here, he's going to take his time before he names the next captain. But, you know, they could also announce small morning that Zach Werenski will be the next captain. I have no idea. But looking at the past behavior of a guy like Rick Bowness, and even Don Waddell to some point, I think they're going to take their time and make sure that they name the right person.
Good stuff, my man. As always, they've given us a lot to talk about. I kind of feel like number 14 tonight is a little bit in the dead zone of the draft, but they wound up getting a pretty good dude last year, they feel. And do you feel they'll make this pick?
I think they'll make this pick unless, you know, they get knocked out of their chair for the 14th pick, which is extremely rare, right? It's rare that you see teams, but don't be surprised to see this 14th pick. If it's going to be moved, it may happen like while the draft is going on, not necessarily prior to the draft, but depending, you know, some teams may have a player that, you know, is pretty high on their list, still available at 14, and that's when you'd see some kind of move happen. But again, you know, it's hard to call it the dead zone, but if you're looking at the draft historically, some good guys have come in later than, you know, the top five, which is a spectacular this year. But yeah, 14, typically you're not getting like a premier star that's going to be, you know, a first line winger or center for years to come, but you never know. And that's why the draft takes place, because, you know, we're talking about Kirill Marchenko just a little bit ago, and you talk about a guy was drafted pretty late in his draft, and he still had a lot of success in this league.
CBJ analyst and former Jacket himself, Jean-Luc Grandpierre, you're the best. Appreciate you jumping on. Thank you.
All right, guys. Take care.
Bye-bye. Yep. Talk to you soon. All right, JL. That was good. There's a lot there. They've given us a lot to talk about lately. He was on the Bryant Heat and Cooling Systems Fangest Hotline. All right, we're going to come back, and we'll switch back to college football. And there is a five-star edge rusher who's been dismissed from one of the top SEC programs. We'll tell you all about that next. Rothman at
543.
Bishop and Friends.
Your comedic timing on the zinger to Saban.
I thought we could smile a little bit, laugh a little bit. If the timing was right and coach is there, we could maybe get a smile on.
Bishop and Friends, sponsored by Diamond Seller.
Weekdays from 9 to noon on The Fan.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
There's nothing like ripping off your pants and enjoying some lobster bisque. This is Rothman and Ice.
Got Scotty drooling for a second.
I love lobster bisque.
It's not something that I would ever think of. First of all, the opportunity, this is supply and demand. I'm not going anywhere lately that I would say, oh yeah, it's the soup of the day. Oh, it's lobster bisque.
So we go up to Put-in Bay every summer.
Sure.
And they do the lobster bisque in a bread bowl. And it is just ridiculously good.
There's not too many things that are served in a bread bowl that I don't like.
Yeah.
That's
the bisque. Gotta have the bisque.
So I've never had a lobster roll, but I've always wanted one.
What is a lobster roll? Is
it's
it?
It's in a little
lobster sandwich.
A little po' boy. It's in like a, yeah.
Oh, okay. So it's just a lobster sandwich. Yeah, I've never done that either, obviously.
They're amazing. That you got to have.
Would you rather that or the soup, Cole?
Probably that, but.
Yeah.
Are you dipping it in like butter or what's.
Oh, if that's on the table, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's. I mean, now you got me going. That's. Lobster roll. There's lobster roll dip. Hot or cold. Captures the classic flavors of a Maine lobster roll. Man. That's mayonnaise.
Well, you heated something up in that microwave and you brought it in and you made me hungry.
Wasn't a lobster roll.
No.
But that would be great. Where do we get a good lobster roll? In central Ohio. Where are they fishing these Maine lobsters out for us?
Lake Erie.
Scotty's up at Put-in Bay. He says he can.
He's catching them.
Yeah, those are Maine lobster traps. Those are illegal. All right. Tennessee Volunteers. They were celebrating when they landed this 5-star kid. Sorry, got a lobster roll in there. Chaz Coleman. Tell me about him.
So I pulled up the transfer rankings, Anthony. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we see, you know, there was a crazy amount of buzz that Chaz Coleman might be coming to Ohio State in the offseason. So everybody got all hyped up because he was at Penn State. He ends up going for reportedly an NIL deal around $2 million. Mm. Ends up going to Tennessee.
Now, when you say $2 million.
Roughly, that's the rumored amount.
Now, do you guys all feel that that means like almost a package of potential up to, like, this isn't hard dollars. This isn't like, you come here, we give you $2 million. Like, that can't be.
Why not? Why wouldn't it be? What you think it's a performance-based? Like, okay.
No, I think it's like over time, over years, over
Are you signing and then immediately you receive a $2 million check? No, I can't imagine that's the case.
Because could transfer in a year.
What is the deal? Like, if you are, let's say he gets
nuts
right up front, I don't know, $300,000. And he doesn't
even. A signing bonus.
Yeah. And so then he's there. Do you have to give that back if you don't play? Like, what? We don't see any contracts. So how does that even work?
What I'm saying, is it coming directly from the school? Is this donors? Are these NIL deals where you're associated with a business and you have to actually perform a few off the field things to get it? Certain, like, I don't know. It's all over the board, is the point.
Yeah.
Nobody really knows. But I can't imagine you're just handing a guy a check for that and saying, okay, I hope you play well.
Right, but he's got to get something up front. There's got to be some amount of money.
He's got to pay taxes.
And, of course, the deal is he isn't even going to play a down for Tennessee.
Yeah.
And now that he's now officially off the team. And so, but I pulled up the transfer rankings, and he was number 9 in the transfer portal ranking list, and Sorsby was 10. So you had two guys now that in the top 10 of the transfer portal rankings who aren't even going to play a down this year.
Well, and this is why it's such a, I don't know if it's a good look or a bad look for Tennessee, because my original thought was, okay, this is great. The dog is finally back to wagging its own tail. Like, and I was like, okay, this may be fine. Now, he may have some other circumstances on why he's leaving or why they dismissed him, and it could be mutual and other things he's dealing with. So I'm not going to judge that. But this is the second straight offseason that Tennessee has dealt with issues regarding a high-profile player. They had Nico, the five-star quarterback, and he had an NIL dispute. So Iamaleava ended up going to UCLA, presumably for less money, and then they went out and grabbed Joey Aguilar and replaced him. So it's a shopping portal. I understand that, but the details of Coleman's situation aren't known, so that one's hard. But if there was another issue, if, and this is a big if, there was another issue with NIL money owed to him, then you've got other recruits and transfers, and word spreads, oh, Tennessee's, you can't count on that. Like, that's what you don't want.
No doubt.
And so I feel like they need to get ahead of this a little bit, because when I originally thought about it, I'm like, you know what? Good for them. If he wasn't living up to his end of the bargain, or he wasn't showing up for whatever reason, that they're entitled as a university to say, okay, we're cutting ties. We wish you the best in your future endeavors. Like, they're entitled to do that. I don't think it's always on the player, and I don't think it's always on the school, but this one's interesting.
Well, and he's an Ohio kid, right? So yeah. He played high school football at Warren Harding, and a lot of people thought that he was going to be coming home. I saw a lot of, and again, these are rumors, but it sounds like, you know, there was some talk of that he got a little homesick. But the weird thing is he played at Penn
State.
That's
what the money's for. So you're not sick anymore.
Right, right. But he was with Knowles Goodfellas. At Penn State.
That was an original.
Oh. But he was with Knowles at Penn State, goes to Tennessee. So now, like, what's the next step for him? Because I don't believe you can now just enter the transfer portal, right? The portal is closed.
Moose outside should have told you.
Roadhouse.
Vacation. Sorry you missed that, but yeah.
If I had Scotty Vegas theme music, we'd play it.
Yeah, Scotty, you should have told us your walk-up theme music. Yeah. We would have played it for you because you got the answer. What would it be? What is your theme music?
Gosh.
We'll save that for Tell the Truth. So you have an hour to think about
it. I'm going to think about what your theme music should be.
Yeah.
We have now five or six. We need to swap them out now. I've got some new ones I need to. There's a rotation now. He asked us in the beginning, like, what? So we had to come up with each with one theme music. But then it turns out.
I asked for three. Maddie's the one who said, no, we should only get one. And I'm like, I'm going to get sick and tired of hearing the same song over and over again. And we need to rotate them.
Yeah. It's like when you had to play Scotty Doesn't Know like 20 times 2 weeks ago.
Exactly.
Right.
Jay Lewis theme music. We need Tyvus to get theme music.
I want to let you guys know this, that there was thought, like, when Brendan Sorsby couldn't make it in the NFL, that he was going to just pick up the phone and call Canada. And I guess the CFL has answered and then hung up.
Whoa.
They're not letting him in either.
Wow.
So, and they couldn't. They couldn't. Now, he hasn't, I'm not telling you that he desperately wanted to go to Canada. I think it's just, it was an option that was there. But the CFL is already getting ahead of the, nope, we're up holding the integrity of our league and the allegations are serious and concerning. So basically, don't bother calling.
Do you believe that he ever plays a down in the NFL?
Yeah.
You do.
I do.
Despite, you know.
Yeah, I do.
He's going to be out this year, and there's got to be a suspension on top of that going
forward.
Well,
a lot of people feel like his suspension is this.
This is the secret suspension?
Well, the double secret probation, that he can't come now, that he'll be eligible next year. But you're right, that may come with a short suspension as well.
Well,
I don't know, less than six games, not a full season. This is by the way, they're essentially suspending him for this season. That's why I'm saying that I think this is the suspension. He's got to sit a year out. That's why I thought the NFL could just tell their teams, hey, we're going to let him in the supplemental draft, but just so you know, he's not playing this year. So buyer beware.
A one-year suspension. And so now this is the double secret one-year suspension, and then there won't be a suspension on top of that.
I don't think so.
Boy, I think I disagree. I think
so. Essentially, he's going to get 2 years.
I think. Well, I don't know if it'll be a full year suspension. So but I believe it'll be at least six games.
All right. Tress is going up in the Ring of Honor, and we decided to have a little fun with his era, and maybe even draft our special Tressel team. That's next, Rothman.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good afternoon, I'm Tyler Anberg. Round one of the NHL draft starts tonight at 7. The Blue Jackets have the 14th pick for the second straight year, while the Maple Leafs own the top pick, which ESPN's final mock draft projects to be Penn State forward Gavin McKenna. CBJ also picks 94th, 101st, 142nd, 182nd, and 206th. Hear the Blue Jackets draft special on The Fan from 7 to 9. World Cup, ESPN reports Norway star Erling Haaland will miss today's 3 p.m. clash against France. He's tied with France's Kylian Mbappe for the second most goals in the tournament. Baseball, after a 34-47 start, the Mets fired manager Carlos Mendoza, naming Andy Green interim manager. Today, Reds visit the Pirates at 6:40. Also tonight, Guardians host the Mariners at 7:10. This update sponsored by RCDRV Supercenter and Heat Delaware and Pataskala, or at rcdrv.com. Breaking sports news when it happens on The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Most shows just skim the surface, but Rothman and Ice feel like the biggest story of the day deserves a closer look. It's time for A Deeper Dive.
Sponsored by Orthopedic One, Central Ohio's most trusted orthopedic practice. Find a physician or location near you at orthopedicone.com.
All right, final hour of the program. Rothman and Ice, Jensen Lewis, Chin Music 230. He'll jump on then. We'll hit guards. We'll hit reds. We'll hit a lot going on in baseball. Usually on a Friday, I wouldn't call it. I never really mail in a show. I think you know. I don't mail in a show.
Right. Of course not.
But Scotty comes in today on a Friday and just starts handing like handouts and stapled stuff. And
yes.
I'm like double sided information and research, and I'm like, really?
We got to really dive in here.
I mean, you guys like that in school when they're giving handouts?
Study guides.
No handouts.
Oh, you got a handout. I printed out, 15 pages of research here for you for these next two segments, which the first 2 hours of this show have been fun. I think this next hour is going to be incredible, what we have planned.
I don't know. I'd underpromise and overdeliver.
It's
going to
suck.
I feel like that we have something here. And your response was correct. You looked at me and said, well, you do call it the deep dive. So
this is deep.
That does include a bunch of handouts. So we know that Jim Tressel's ride here. It was highs, lows, and his tenure was extremely successful. And he won a ton of Big Ten titles, a national title. And it was the first in over 30 years at the university when he pulled it off, and he pulled it off so early. And we started thinking, or Scotty really did, it's almost impossible because of the amount of great players he had in his era. And most Ohio State coaches do get a ton of talent. And so I don't know what your criteria is for this. I'm curious to learn.
This is the all-Tressel team. So we are going to go through each position and end up with who in the Tressel era was best at
all
each
right,
position.
Mike Nugent, kicker.
And we're going to pretend like
my work here is done.
Yes, Nugent, we can lock that one in. And I think Andy Groom probably punter. Yes. So let's just lock the special teams in right here, right now.
And are we doing a joint team together? Yes. Co-GMs?
Yes.
Okay. Maya joint? By the way, he just said, I think Tressel would enjoy the fact that we did lock in special teams first.
Of course.
And that was by accident.
Yes.
We were glossing over it. He probably would be loving it.
Yeah.
He said, any team starts and ends with special teams. Glad you guys did that.
So what we're going to do is we're going to go through, and of course, he is going into the Ring of Honor this week, and we saw the huge celebration in the locker room, and a lot of his former players were there, and the honor was really cool to see. And so from 01 to 10, Tressel here, we're taking his players. Let's start out at quarterback, and I think this one's probably pretty easy. I don't think we have to work too hard to get to what quarterback we want representing the Tressel era. I might ask you what you think quarterback two should be, but
actually,
Troy Smith is easy quarterback one.
He was a video game. He was that good.
Yes.
He was, and he's the only Heisman guy in his era.
Now,
for trust. So
let's say we have to pick up a backup quarterback. Are you taking Craig Krenzel, or are you taking Terrell Pryor? Because it's not Bellisari, it's not Zwick, it's not Beckman. Is it Pryor or Krenzel for QB2?
So this is a deep dive, because if I know it may not be fair, but if I throw out statistics and everything like that, like Krenzel's not in the, if you're leaving statistics in and personal stuff, then he's not in that conversation, then he's not there. Now, he was the leader of a national title team, and he was gutsy, and he was clutch, and he had holy Buckeye, and he was unflappable at times. Like, I think that those are big characteristics in a quarterback. And so it'd be tough for me to choose a guy who was all on the all grit team versus the weaponry that Terrell Pryor brought to the table. I like a smart quarterback. I like an accurate quarterback. I like a QB that has a high IQ. And I like a quarterback that delivers when you need it most. And guess what? Check, 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 check. Like, that's Krenzel. It'd be weird for me to take him over Pryor, just based on
having the two stand next to each other and just like
your Krenzel won.
I know. He's a winner. In fact, you didn't even need to convince me. I had Krenzel down as QB2 over Pryor.
I think it's closer than
it's just, very close. Yeah. But I have it. Cole, yeah. You good with Troy Smith, QB1,
yeah.
Krenzel, QB2?
Sure. Are we making a mistake not going with Pryor? Here's how you look at it. Let's say we had a game to play and our starter got injured and we had a chance to go to Krenzel or Pryor. And, like, now it gets you thinking.
I know. If I'm a GM, I'm probably saying, well, I got to go with Pryor.
Now, this is something, speaking of, if you're a GM, you would probably think about this on draft night and then never actually implement this, mm-hmm. but you could put in some packages for Terrell Pryor as kind of a bully ball quarterback in short yardage. That's the type of stuff that people talk about on draft night and then never actually do.
He never lost to Michigan. So, yeah. I mean, you know, no, I'm just saying he didn't either. It's not like that's our tiebreaker. Like, he was perfect.
Let's
he was good in BCS.
Let's
games,
put in Krenzel, because that was our initial QB2.
And it's kind of actually, to me, it's just it leans more into my personality. I would rather have him.
And let's hope that Troy Smith stays healthy in our theoretical Jim Tressel game and then we don't get to QB2.
Tweaked.
Yeah. All right, running back. This one's going to be really interesting. So the ones that are up for debate, you got Carlos Hyde, you got Boom Heron, you got Antonio Pittman, you got Lydell Ross, you got Jonathan Wells. But the two that I think we have to choose from, and again, we can only pick one, Maurice Clarett or Beanie Wells.
Mm.
Who's representing the all Tressel team?
Beanie was so powerful and fast. So was Mo, but boy. There's a fascination that I would have with Clarett. Now, over a whole season, I know Beanie got hurt a little bit, and so did Maurice, so that's kind of a wash. But, man, on paper, it's tough to not choose Beanie.
I can't wait till we get to the linebacker.
Power.
I know.
Power and combo.
That's coming. Yeah.
I mean,
I'm going.
And Maurice was not a flash in the pan. That's not what I want to say. Like, he just arrived on the scene so fast. And Beanie was kind of like, had a solid freshman year. Remember, he shared with Antonio Pittman. So,
yep.
And it kind of evolved into a beast. And he's an MVP type guy, too.
Beanie did it over multiple seasons, right? And Clarett, it was that one freshman year.
I'm going to stay with the identity of my team, and I'm going to go with Beanie.
Okay. I can get with you on going Beanie. To me, that was 50-50. It really was. Clarett, you could easily make the argument for Clarett. All right, let's go wide receivers. And because it's the Jim Tressel era, we're only taking two. I know Cole said before the show, we got to take three wide receivers.
So almost needed a little music.
Yeah,
no, we can do that in a second. And, you know, Scotty wants to do this for an hour and a half or 3 hours. So, I mean, got plenty of time.
All right. What wide receivers are we taking? We could think about Ted Ginn Jr., of course.
Well, I don't think you got to think anymore.
I know. Right, actually, let's just circle Ted Ginn right now.
I mean, Ted, because you're getting him on kickoffs, you're getting him on punts, you're getting all of that.
Okay.
He was an all-purpose guy, and I think that. And plus, he's a home run waiting to happen.
Wide receiver, Santonio Holmes. Is it Anthony Gonzalez? Is it Brian Robisky?
I'm going to take
Brian
Santonio.
Hartline. Is it DeVere? Is it Dane Sanzenbacher?
Yeah, I'm going to take Santonio Holmes.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I think that's, he's got everything.
All right, we got to pick a tight end.
And really, when you think about it, not just Ohio State, but I mean, Santonio Holmes may have the most famous catch in football. Now, I think Dwight Clark and Lynn Swan and guys that have made catches in massive games,
Odell,
and great ones.
I hate to say it, but the answer
is,
Odell.
But it's, but in to,
David
but
Tyree.
But for Santonio to do it in a Super Bowl on the final drive, like that's every kid in the world has tried the keep the toes in, lean, go parallel. I mean, that ball had to be there, but you can't tell me that's another one. You're right. There may have been, quote, more circus-type catches, but that's as
well,
good as it gets.
You said most famous,
yeah.
And I'm reluctantly saying that Odell has.
Yeah, Tyree may be the most.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I think Santonio's took more talent.
For my year, it would have been Dwight Clark. Against the Cowboys. That would have been the one.
We need our tight end. So Ben Hartsock, AI tells me the signature tight end of the early Trestle era.
What did you ask Brock or
I told
Chad
you. This is
Chad.
The deep dive.
What did
right?
Chad so GPT have to say?
Dove deep, and they love Ben Hartsock. So I also love Jake Ballard. So he ends up having a big career as far as a couple Super Bowl moments. I'll go Ballard. Give me Jake Bowden. Which way are you going tight end? Are you going Ben Hartsock, who was, of course, on that national championship team?
Yeah, it was big. I mean, he caught a decent amount of passes.
Are you taking Hartsock over our boy Jake?
What would he tell me to do? Would he say, hey?
He'd say, I'm the man.
Would he?
Yeah. Yes,
I don't
would.
Know. I love Harts as well.
Okay. Is that where we're going, Hartsock?
Well,
Cole's got to break the tie.
Here's the good news. We got Jake covered, so that way, I mean, he's on your squad. So,
all right, so Hartsock.
Either way, that is splitting
hairs. I'm a Coppin, guys. I'll take Jake Stoneburner just because.
Okay.
All right.
Even though that's not the correct answer.
Let's quickly do just 5-0 line real quick. So, look, Charles Bentley, Nick Mangold, Locke. Alex Boone, probably. Got to be on the list. Adrian Clark, Stepanovich, Rob Sims, TJ Downing.
Baker's boy.
Do we say Kirk Barton? No. You're taking him off.
I like, I'm looking at the options here. What about Jimmy Cordle?
Ooh. Yep, I could give. Yes, let's go Cordle.
Because he was a guy who could start at both center and guard. I like that.
So Cordle, Bentley, Mangold.
Positional versatility.
It does lean into my, right? a value pick.
Yeah, there you go.
Jimmy Cordle, a great value pick.
What about Shane?
Later went on to win a Super Bowl with the New York Football Giants.
What about Shane Olivier? He was all Big Ten, I think, and spent some time in the NFL.
Yeah, and we're obviously not counting NFL, but
this is the all-Trestle era team. We're putting together the best possible team we can.
Right tackle? Is that what we're thinking about for Shane?
Yeah, I mean, we're just taking the top five.
Oh, okay, so we're not actually having to insert them into an offensive line.
No, we're not
playing
anybody.
Let's take a break. I think we have the offensive line pretty much settled.
Okay.
All right, we'll head on over to the defensive side next. Rothman.
Tita Green with Skip Mossick.
Saturday, we'll chat with former Buckeye Ryan Armour as he gets set to come back to town for next week's Senior Open, plus First Call's Gary Van Sickle.
Tita Green with Skip Mossick, Saturday mornings at 9 on The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Chances of showers and thunderstorms in the forecast today, otherwise mostly cloudy with temperatures in the upper 70s. That chance of rain continues overnight and into your Saturday morning with a partly sunny day ahead. Chances of showers and storms, especially in the afternoon, and highs in the low 80s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
The radio couldn't contain us, so we've taken over YouTube. Catch Morning Juice weekday mornings at 6 by searching 971 The Fan. Do it. Rothman and Ice present Free Snap Reads.
sponsored by Dr. Mark Levy. If you're snoring and not sleeping, call Dr. Mark Levy today at 1-800-MORE-SLEEP.
All right, page 6 of subsection B, paragraph 3, Trestles All Everything Team. So we have Troy at QB. We have
Krenzel, QB2.
We do have QB2. We have Beanie at running back, but we only got one.
Yep, we had to leave Claret on the sidelines.
Be our guy. Come on in. Maybe do a wheel route, call a play. Wide maybe even strip somebody if there's a fumble or an interception.
Wide receiver, Santonio Holmes, Ted Ginn Jr.
We love it both.
We didn't spend a lot of time on wide receiver. Yeah. We felt pretty good with those two. Maybe Anthony Gonzalez.
Malcolm
first
Jenkins.
Off the bench.
Right. All right, tight end.
That's cornerback.
Malcolm Jenkins.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant Michael.
Tight end, we debated. We ended up going Ben Hartsock. You said he was better than Jake Ballard.
I did not say that. Jake, you know that's not true.
Yeah, he didn't say that. The offensive line, we settled on with Charles Bentley, Nick Mangold. Actually, we didn't settle on it. This is what we loved. Yeah. Bentley, Mangold, Alex Boone, Jimmy Cordle, and Shane Olivier.
Mm-hmm.
That's our offensive line. We needed our defense. By the way, we do have Nugent locked in at kicker and Andy Groom at punter. Let's go defensive line. I think you got to go Will Smith for sure. Maybe, actually, definitely Cam Hayward, Vern Golston.
Didn't turn out well in the pros, but we're not judging that. I do. Will Smith was. I mean, that's a done deal.
Will Smith and Cam Hayward for sure. We need a couple defensive tackles. Maybe Quinn Pitcock. Tim Anderson.
Wait, Darian Scott.
Darian Scott. Yes. Didn't he go to the Vikings?
He was with us for a brief, I think. Simon Frazier, I've got some nostalgia for him as far as being a local kid, UA, playing on the championship team. Mike Kudla was an absolute beast. I mean, he was strong.
But strong like bull. I think we got to go.
All right, so
Will Smith.
So we'll go Will. I'm going to circle
Cam Hayward.
Cam for sure. I don't see Cam on your handout.
He's 2010 on page 11.
Page 11. My goodness.
Let's go.
Just rosters.
I think
overflowing with rosters.
I think Tim Anderson. Gosh, he was a beast on that 0-2 line. Tim Anderson.
Yeah.
And maybe Darian Scott.
All right, there's Cam. I like that.
All right. Linebackers, and I'm excited.
Let me ask you this, though, real fast.
I dare you not to pick Bobby.
Does he have... Was it the end of the era? I mean, we're not putting... Are we leaving out John Simon?
That's more, I think, the Urban.
There was some crossover.
I know. I'm just saying there was a crossover. He does get to claim him. Doesn't he?
He recruited him.
That's what I'm saying.
Like,
honestly, that's probably...
I think you only get his trestle years, though.
All right, that's fine then. Cross him off then.
Okay, so linebackers. Quit stalling. We're going to the linebackers, Anthony. A.J. Hawk, James Laurinaitis, locked in.
Done.
No question. Now we have a little debate. Do we go with a Matt Wilhelm?
You're going all of his friends.
Do we go Bobby? Do we go Schlegel? Oh my. Marcus Freeman? I'll let you answer.
I mean, Bob knows. I mean...
Bob knows what?
Yeah. Bob knows.
I don't know.
Bob knows we put his boy on A.J. Hawk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A.J.'s in there, but is Bobby in there is what we're asking you.
Yeah. It's basically, to me, it's Matt Wilhelm or Bobby.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Wilhelm was a consensus All-American. I think that I would not have a problem with that.
All right, you said it. Wilhelm is in. Sorry, this is your show, I know. Let's go defensive backs.
Bob's amazing.
He is. He
broke his leg against Michigan. He launched James's career.
All right, are we taking...
I'm just saying. Go ahead. We're all good.
All right, defensive backs. I think Malcolm Jenkins. First off.
Yeah, I jumped the gun on that. I do think Chris Gamble. I've been thinking about Chris Gamble a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's.
Well, he can play both ways for us as well.
Yeah, I think that type of talent and versatility. He was a pick six machine. He was consistent. He was dependable. I think he's important.
So we got Mike Doss for sure.
Doss for sure.
We need another.
Now, the funny thing about that is he doesn't get all of. Truss had him for two, right?
What year did Truss have? 2002.
Yeah, because he was. I think he had the year with Coop. But he's a three-time All-American. I just think two of them were with Truss and not all three.
Now, what year did Truss take over? 01.
Yeah.
Oh, I got you.
So the other safety position, we have Mike Doss. The other safety is either going to be Will Allen, Dante Whitner.
Oh, he could hit.
Wow. I know.
Whit could hit.
Or Kurt Coleman.
He could hit, too. I'm going to take Whitner.
Dante Whitner. I'm good with that. No, again, three great options there. So our defense, our official Will Allen,
though, I mean, that's
era defense. We're going to go with Will Smith, Cam Hayward. We're going to go Tim Anderson and Darian Scott as your defensive tackles. Our linebackers are AJ, James Laurinaitis, Matt Wilhelm, and then our defensive backs. Our defensive backs are Mike Doss, Dante Whitner, Malcolm Jenkins, and Chris Gamble. That's the all Trestle team. Mm-hmm.
Should have just been a 3-4 defense.
It's pretty amazing.
Could have solved all those problems for Rothman. Could add both.
Bob's on the team. He's on my team.
Well, you're making him play special teams. Apparently, like you didn't put him in the lineup.
No. I mean, he's going to get in there. He's going to cover somebody for me. Yeah. We'll have him in there. That's a heck of a squad.
That's fun. Does the Trestle team versus the Urban Meyer team? That would be a fun little matchup to do.
Yeah, let's wait on that one.
Yeah.
You got a handout for that?
Well, we'll work on that. It literally is fun. 15 pages of names and stats.
I'm glad you brought all these names back to the table. And I'll tell you, what went through my mind also was prior to that era against Tresses, like the era where I first came in and started cover, like Pace and Springs and Ty Howard and all those guys, Vrabel and Finkus, and like that era against that Tresses, that would be something to go reverse, to go back.
The Cooper era.
Yep. All right, we're going to come back in 2 minutes. My boy Jensen Lewis, VSiN by the Books, MLB Network Radio, will get his take on baseball this weekend. And they did have a managerial firing today. We'll talk about that as well. Rothman.com.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door Showroom on Gemini Parkway.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
At your own risk. It's time for some chin music with former big leaguer and president of the Bald is Beautiful fan club, Jensen Lewis.
Sponsored by Logan AC and Heat Services. Feeling the heat? Call the experts at Logan Services now for hot deals on Trane air conditioners.
I feel the need for speed. My man Jensen Lewis, VSiN by the Books, MLB Network Radio, with us now on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems bullpen phone line. My man, how we feeling?
Good to see you, brother. I can't believe we're halfway home already. Feels like this season has flown by in so many respects, and still a pretty big logjam for position in the postseason. What a race I think we're going to have, not only through the finish line of the first half, but in the second half as well.
Yes, you and I have talked about this a lot. It feels like the Guardians, it's a division that's there for the taking. I know there's a long way to go. I don't know. They've been solid, right? They're in a little bit of a rut now. I think, what are they, 5-10 in the last 15? And it's weird because they don't look like a true division leader to me.
Yeah.
But that's okay. Sometimes it breaks your way. But with J-Ram being sidelined now for a long time, DeLauder hit the DL, and I guess I'd ask it this way, getting things turned back around and getting momentum, how
big of a task is that?
It's a monumental one. But you get Cooper Engle headed up here, kind of another opportunity to infuse a bit of energy and more importantly, some offensive output, because I think that's what you're up against, right? Is without Jose Ramirez, without DeLauder, I believe it's the last 13 games, Guardians have scored four runs or fewer. And obviously the drop off in record is where it is. Now you get a nice long homestand started tonight against a team, that AR has scored three runs or fewer in 11 consecutive games in Seattle. So if you're catching a team at the right time, that would be the time to catch the Mariners as they're in town. But as we know, that pitching staff pretty vaunted, so we could see a lot of run suppression there. I think a lot predicated, though, AR, next week when you get the four-game series against the White Sox, that's where you got to kind of push some chips to the middle and kind of reassert yourself in this division. Because overall, the American League, it is wild to say this, but AR, as we begin play, Guardians would be that number two wild card team right now by virtue of the tiebreak. As the White Sox are ahead at the moment in the season series, but between the Guardians and then all the way down to the Minnesota Twins, there's seven teams basically within 4.5 games of each other for the final two playoff spots. So we have no separation right now, and I don't anticipate that being the case, especially in a very downtrodden American League overall.
You know, I look at the Reds and they're just kind of toying with their fans right now. I mean, they're not out of it, but they're not in it. Yeah. I know that getting into that last wild card spot wouldn't be insurmountable, but there are a lot of talented teams between them as well, right, in that last spot. I guess they could make the leap. It feels tough. Maybe they have a chance here now. They won a couple series against the Mets and Yanks, so they're on a little bit of a downswing. I don't know, maybe that hot start put expectations in a bad spot, but I do want to ask you this. What is going on with Eugenio Suarez? You and I both like him. His average is down to 209. He's always been a slugger over the last, I don't know, decade, and he's on a slide, man. He missed some time to injury in May, but June's been awful. He turns 35 next month. Does he have a turnaround in him?
If they're going to have any push whatsoever, they will need that. So if you just kind of look at the underlying metrics here, AR, 28 strikeouts in his last 71 ABs covering the month of June. I mean, when you got that kind of free air conditioning, you hope it's in the stands as a patron, not there in the batter's box. So that's the tough part, is he's just not putting enough balls in play to even give himself a chance. He's OPS under 600. Hard to wrap your head around their AR because of the back of his baseball card. We're so used to him having some of these runs where he's as white hot as it gets. So the swing and miss, a huge part of it. And I think just this past game, he broke a stretch there of about, what, 9-10 games in a row where he had at least one punch out. It has just been a real problem for them offensively to get any continuity in that regard. If I were looking sort of glass half full, AR, and you mentioned kind of where they are in the wild card race, you got to get back to an even run differential. They have the third worst run differential in the National League at minus 50. You're not making up any spots with that. But also, you're only five games under 500. If you were to tell me this is the picture, and I got half the season left, and we know who's the skipper in the dugout, AR, you get the best second-half manager in the modern era that can push the buttons and make the tweaks. That's where I would tell Cincinnati Reds fans, if you wanted to put your chips on a guy that has come through for teams in the past at this point in the season, that would be Terry Francona.
Yeah, and the fans, I think, are even losing faith in him. They're wondering whether he has what you're talking about, which is that second half bag of tricks. We'll find out. All right, so when you have a $300 million plus roster and you're 13 below 500, you fire the manager. That's what happened with the Mets. So Mendoza goes away. How does that impact anything?
So what I would say initially on the surface, I can't believe he lasted as long as he did, just knowing you're 13 games under 500, you're 9.5 out of a playoff spot. Okay, so that is what it is. You've lost six in a row. You just got it handed to you by the Chicago Cubs. That was the final nail in the coffin. If you look at where this group is, you are going to get phone calls if you're David Stearns, and let's kind of keep the searchlight out for him too, because it you know, Steve Cohen's not afraid to make some rash decisions here. And, you know, Mendoza may be the first domino to drop here. But if I'm a contending club, I am immediately getting on the horn to see what the acquisition costs would be for a Devin Williams, for a Luke Weaver, for Oscar Brazoban, who has been almost untouchable here the last 2 weeks, as well as Luke Weaver has. I'd be looking to pluck some relief candidates before the price goes super high. And then, you know, you look offensively, I think Mark Vientos is probably going to attract at least a couple of teams that are looking for a role player there. I don't think you get any of the young pups that are going anywhere anytime soon. But that's kind of where I would be at this point. And I'll tell you the worst part, AR, with Freddie Peralta pitching as bad as he has, that was the one thing I think they kind of hoped was, well, if it goes south, we can at least ship this guy out and be able to get a haul for him. Ain't nobody running to the phone to call David Stearns to get Freddie Peralta out of Citi Field anytime soon.
Yeah. All right, I want to get your take on North Carolina's magical season that came to an end. This was an upset, right? I mean, they've now lost all of the championship series they've gone to. That's a heartbreaker, but they ran into a runaway train, right? As good as North Carolina had been all year, I think it's about getting hot at the right moment. And I think they ran into the hottest team in the country in Oklahoma.
No question about it. Dayton LaChance just all of a sudden became Babe Ruth. And, you know, it was incredible to see what their young freshmen on the mound were able to do. AR, you've nailed it, because we talk about this a lot in college football, right? You can have the loss or two to start the year, but man, you get on a tear and no one can stop you. Well, remember, Oklahoma was kind of sitting mid to bottom of the SEC halfway through the year. I remember watching game one in Nashville between Oklahoma and Vanderbilt. LJ Mercurius was on the mound. I mean, this was frontline 10, 11, 12 punch out stuff. I'm like, I mean, you get me into the tournament with this frontline starting pitching, you can go anywhere and go a long way. And I think that is exactly to your point of everything hit offensively. Willits was unbelievable. And you think about where young pups answer the bell and then some. I don't know if anyone could have predicted the amount of freshmen, the amount of young pitching on that stage against a pretty shrewd and pretty aggressively methodical lineup in Scott Forbes' Tar Heels group. Credit where it's due, man. I would say that it means more in the SEC, AR. You already know that, but 7 years in a row, man. And hey, they're going to go for magic number 8 here in 2027.
I want to get your take on this. My feeling is, and you would know better than I do, whether Las Vegas cleaned up on the U.S. Open. And what I mean by in golf, what I mean by that is that no one is really betting Wyndham Clark on Sunday. He had too big of a lead. He was too big of a favorite. All the money went on Scheffler. And then in-game betting probably all went in on Burns. Now, maybe when it got to a shot, people said, all right, there's value on Wyndham Clark. I'll take it. But he was leaking oil. And I think Scheffler was within shouting distance, and I think there was some value. I think starting this Sunday, he was maybe 6 or 7 to 1. Mm-hmm. And that may have been enough because he had no pressure, was freewheeling, he was in the final group. People thought, all right, he throws a birdie or two up early, and now it's on. Right. And that never really happened, but Burns almost got him. And I just feel like with Wyndham Clark eventually winning, I feel like Las Vegas raked because of all the money they probably got on Sunday was not on him.
Definitely. 50 to 1 I was seeing before tee off on round one Thursday. And remember, a lot was predicated too on this was supposed to be a weather event in round one. If you were going off early, you might have been luckier, because all of a sudden there was supposed to be this wind, an issue that you could have set some of those guys. And there were a lot of big names that were there at the the afternoon tee times that ended up really benefiting because all of a sudden the weather never came. So yeah, the long shot comes in. I'm sure there were a lot of people that probably took a shot on Scheffler upwards of 6-7 to 1 on Sunday. I know there's some people that were pretty high on Tommy Fleetwood. Again, can't get it home there in a major. A lot of people love Xander Schauffele, and why not? His U.S. Open history has been just auto bet him for a top 20, and you're cashing those tickets. So I think they did well, at least from the reports that we got. And I'll be fascinated, AR, because you and I will certainly be tuned in across the pond. Our old friend Rory McIlroy has kind of decided to forego some of the tournaments in between. He's already kind of pulling the Augusta lead up where he's over there for multiple weeks and playing the course. And, you know, it felt like he lived there in Georgia for 4 weeks leading up to getting that back-to-back green jacket. So I may have to find a little cross-sport parlay to play Rory at double-digit odds to be able to win the Open, because it feels like he's on that track again. He don't care about the last elevated event, at least in PGA Tour history, before we get the Championship and Challenger Series starting next year. So excited to see what it looks like in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think the people that bet Clark before certainly got that 50-1, and I'm sure there were a lot of people that did because he had won a major before. I just felt like on Sunday, which is the day a lot of people come to the table and say, all right, let me see if I can pick the winner. Well, you were picking anybody but him because there was no value on him. Mm-hmm. And then you were still going away from him when it got tight. And so all the money came in on everybody that didn't win. That's just my personal feel. So Vegas probably wins again. My man, have a great weekend. Always enjoy it.
Likewise. Talk to you next week, brother.
You got it. Jensen Lewis, Chin Music on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. You agree with me?
So... yes, I do. But I also want to say, remember an hour and a half ago during the pressure cooker, we were talking about Scottie Scheffler. Okay. Well, it's getting very interesting on the 59 watch.
All right, we'll update that next in Truth. Rothman and I.
Common Man and Timmy.
You made your mom look at your poison ivy covered weed.
I was terrified. I thought I was going to die, or I thought it was going to have to get amputated.
Common Man and Timmy, afternoons on the Fan, is sponsored by the Hinderer Motor Company.
All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Tell the truth with Rothman and Ice.
Sponsored by McDaniel GM Superstore. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive.
All right, before TLC takes us home, Scotty, give us the update on the other Scotty.
Yep, Scotty Scheffler is 10 under, so he needs one birdie to get that 59. Now, he's on 17. He's got a six-foot par putt. If he makes it, then we go to 18, and a birdie gets him to a 59. There's only been a total of 14 59s on the PGA Tour.
Seems like a lot. I would actually guess there'd be less.
Yeah, there's 14. Okay. Just curious, how many can you grab out of those 14?
How many of those can I grab? How about Furyk twice?
Okay.
Is that correct?
Can you tell me the years?
No. No, but I think he has the only 58.
Okay.
And that's at this course, correct?
We got Furyk. He is the only one who's done it, who's only had the 58,
but I guess
has done it twice.
But that's two of the 14, though. It's like Archie,
yep.
Right? All right.
Yep.
Chip Beck.
Yep. 91.
David Duval.
Yep. 99.
That's four. Al Geiberger.
Yep. He was the first in 77.
Adam Hadwin.
Yep. 2017.
Kevin Chappell.
Yep. 2019.
Paul Goitis.
It's pretty good so far. Yep. 2010.
I'm doing this with my eyes closed. So I have eight of the 14?
Yeah. I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
This guy's trying to do it today. He's already done it. Scotty Scheffler has actually already broken 60. He did it in 2020.
I don't remember that. Why? Where was that?
I don't know. I just have the year.
Scotty Scheffler has a 59 on the PGA Tour?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that. All right. I think I'm 8 of the 14. Who else would there be? Who was
he
that?
He did it at the Northern Trust, by the way.
Where was the Northern Trust?
TPC Boston. He went 12 under 59.
Didn't Stuart Appleby have one in West Virginia?
He did. Appleby is on the list.
I know where.
Oh, I don't know.
Doesn't say where?
No.
Okay. So that's nine.
So Jake Knapp.
Don't know.
And Hayden Springer did it.
Yeah.
Cam Young.
Remember that one. I did not say that
Brant
one.
Snedeker.
Snad's okay.
And Justin Thomas.
All right. So nine of the 14. Okay. All right. TLC, take us home.
All right, we might as well stick with a golf theme. This will be one of the two tell the truths that I ever have that's golf related. Not very often, but this is a good one. Wyndham Clark, why are you not a Baker Mayfield fan?
I was curious if I could just take you back to December 3rd, 2016. You said haters going to hate on Twitter earlier in this interview. You did tweet, "I hate Baker Mayfield," and I was just curious if you still feel that way. Maybe your thoughts on that. Maybe that hate in your heart's gone away, or what? Maybe where you're at on that.
I'm trying to decide if I should tell the story.
Yeah. That,
all right, screw it. I don't care. People already hate me. So. No, it's not that bad. My PR team's here.
Listen, your PR team's on the hot seat because we're coming up with ideas they never thought of.
No, they didn't. They prepped me for everything. They didn't prep me for this one. My girlfriend at the time cheated on me with Baker Mayfield.
Oh! So that's a fair tweet.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
But here's what I will say. That one's done. As I have come to, I'm actually a Baker fan now. I think he's a homie. That's your initial response.
Right.
Screw that guy, but really screw the,
Your girlfriend. Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm a Baker fan now, but that's where it came from.
All right. So is this an Oklahoma connection? Because Wyndham went to State and Baker went to Oklahoma.
Must have been.
So this happened when he was in college.
Yes. 2016. I can promise you Baker was in college. I don't know about Wyndham. I assume that they're about the same age if they're getting with the same women.
Yes. So this has nothing to do with women, someone that Baker or his wife or anybody current.
No. The tweet that they were citing was from 2016.
Because I was going to say, that's a pretty bad violation on Wyndham on a bro code if it's somebody that Baker, if it could get Baker into hot water with anybody else.
And Wyndham's 32, Baker's 31. So you're right. Same.
All right. That's unreal. And by the way, in like a casual deal like that for his PR team to say, don't say it. Nah, we're good. Might as well say
everybody
it.
Everybody hates me anyway. Right. Which makes me like
him
more.
Does his story win over fans?
I think it does a little bit.
Yeah. He's comfortable in his own skin.
Yeah, I actually ended up, because there was so much hate towards Wyndham Clark in that final round, I ended up rooting for him because he took so much hate. Yes.
Absolutely. I was with you on that.
By the way, we have this too from earlier in the week, and I kind of thought that this was a joke, and so I had to verify it from multiple sources. But Sports Business Journal, they put out some information because we're talking about jersey patches, and so now we got new sponsors. This one's in the Big 12. Speaking of Oklahoma State, I didn't even mean for all this intertwine. It just worked out. You guys were talking golf. I bring up Wyndham Clark. My next tell the truth, Oklahoma State. Where did Wyndham Clark go to? Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State's jersey patch is the Osage Nation Casinos.
Oh, wow.
Right on the heels of Brendan Sorsby being banned from Texas Tech.
Did Oklahoma State, were they one of the ones that came out and were like, hey, yeah, we hate this. We shouldn't play against a gambler.
The one thing they can always say, though, it's for the fans. It's not for them. I know that's a reach.
That's a big reach.
I know. Scotty, you're the man. Thanks for coming in, brother. Great show.
I have something for you.
All right.
And I am looking at a half-empty bottle of Cavathier, which means that we are just about out of time.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Common Man and Timmy up next. It's a go-to-jail Friday. Keep it locked here on the